Welcome to the March 7th, 2017 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have cell phones or other electronic devices, we ask that you please silence them. If there should be an emergency, there are emergency exits at the back of the room to my right and in the front of the room. I said it the wrong way. To the back of the room to my right and to the front of the room to my left. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. Would you please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chak?
Shalom.
Mr. Dennis is asked to be excused. Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Keeper?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 13 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
We should not need to have an executive session tonight. That I know that'll break all your hearts, but I think we're going to go right ahead to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity the public has to speak to us for up to 3 minutes on any topic. If someone wants to speak, we ask that you please sign a blue card, which is in the back of the room, and pass it up. By signing the card and asking to speak, you're agreeing to the rules of our legislature. You're agreeing to the 3-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. I have just one at this point, but if there are more, please sign them and send them up. We'll ask Mr. Bruce Babcock to speak first. Please tell us your municipality and go ahead. Just about there. Make sure he gets the microphone all right.
Yeah, I just don't want to knock it over. All right, my name is Bruce Babcock, and Trumansburg is where I live. And I'm following up on the last time I spoke here, because at that time I did not have any knowledge on the real property tax law, Section 1182. Now, I was given a brief history of that, and that this board was confronted with that issue once before. And I understand that the attorney said that there's no precedence for granting that waiver. Now, the ADA laws, Americans with Disability Act, every single law that was written there was based on these kind of issues, established precedents. And I mentioned to you that I am totally blind, and I never have received anything from the county, the village, or the town in a form that I can read. There was agreements and there was established precedents to try to get that done. And it was never followed through with. And I submitted tax payments and the checks were rejected. And the Trumansburg one I haven't even received back yet, and no acknowledgement that they received it, but I gave it to them. And now I've got tax late fees to pay that I've refused to pay. And there is a waiver request, but it has to be done in a public hearing. And that's what I'm here for tonight, that it's that Section 1182 real property tax law states that I can request a public hearing on that issue and request a vote on that. And like I say, it's not very much money. It's over $100, but still, because of my blindness and the years and years and years of abuse of that, taking advantage of my handicap done by the municipalities, I have stopped turning the cheek, and I want tonight a vote on this before I go to federal court.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak tonight? All right, let's go to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Who wants to speak first? Step right up.
I'll barge up. Mark Whitmer, supervisor, Town of Caroline. Thank you. So I thought I'd give a couple of updates from Caroline. The first one, Dan alerted me to it the other day. Caroline received a grant for broadband build out in round two funding that was just announced. So I know that Haefely TV will be doing a lot of that. Also, I'm told that Frontier got some of that. So yeah, we're very happy, and we'll be watching that to see when the final map was put out for the round two submissions. There were a couple of large areas that were pulled back, restricted for the 145,000 mandate for build-out passed to unpassed homes for Charter, Spectrum, whatever. So we'll be watching to make sure that, or to hope, you know, try to push for that to be timely and to happen. So that's one very nice piece of good news. I'm told that a resolution we passed at our last business meeting that John Frasia composed there was a response to the governor's claims of the malfeasance by local governments. And I was told that made the rounds here. We had it sent to the legislature. Cal Snow, another council member, and I attended the Association of Towns meeting, annual training in New York City, that was a hot topic there also. There was a council member who spoke from Broome County, actually, about an effort to reach out to the governor to let him know that local governments have done a lot in the way of cost sharing and they've been paying attention to their expenses for a long time. So thank you for recognizing that, and I understand there's a resolution that's evolved from that. So that's great. And then the other news from Caroline is that we are considering with four other towns a proposal to extend the Southeast Recreation Way Trail. That's under consideration. The four towns with the county planning have been thinking about how that could work and reaching out to property owners adjacent to that proposed plan to see if we can make it work. So that's ongoing. Just wanted to let you know. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for coming and sharing that. Is there questions? Will?
Thank you for coming, and please come back. I was aware about that. You mentioned the extension of the Southeast Recreation Trail, and just as somebody who uses trails, I would love to see extended. I know there have been issues with neighbors, as there frequently are in trail projects. And I guess my question is there anything that the county needs to be doing, or is this going to be happening all at the town level, or is it is there?
Yeah. A lot of this has involved planning by the county. So that's been Tom Knipp and Ed Marks have been working on that. I think, so the conception of the project has been that the county would reach out to NYSEG, who owns the property, to obtain a license agreement. And then the four towns would work with property owners to mitigate concerns and address those concerns. So there was a public event in late November at the Coddington Road Community Center that was well attended. The planner, C.J. Randall, the planner, and Danby and I are thinking about or developing a plan to have a similar event in April sometime, it looks like. But we wanted to have another community event just to try to provide information and take feedback. I can't think of anything more that needs to be done. We've tried, for each step of the way, I've reached out to those people who live next to the trail property in Caroline to let them know about the plan and that we're considering it the town board or whatever. So we're just trying to facilitate information and conversation and try to have a constructive conversation. It's at this point, we don't. It will require, as I understand it, the buy-in by the four towns for this project ultimately to have it go forward. But we'd like to, before that, reach out to, and this is sort of where, we'd reach out to NYSEG in advance with approval of the four towns for the license agreement, just to clarify that issue and then move forward from there. And that would, after that, it would be more planning and talking with landowners and coming up with precise numbers and things like that. So,
thank you.
Yep.
Carol.
Well, partly, I just want to congratulate you on getting the grant for the broadband. It was really awful that we couldn't make it work with the effort that we had to drop some of our county because it's unconscionable in today's day and world that somebody not have access to broadband, bless you. And so congratulations. On the trail, and some of us, I have two trails in my district, and I that people have been very enthusiastic about having, even people who were a little fearful of, what might it mean to move into a property with a trail in my backyard. And people are pretty, having lived with it for a long time, they are pretty uniformly enthusiastic. A portion of that is the South Hill Recway, the portion of it that's in the city. So if you need people to come when you are having a meeting, and there are probably other people here who have trails and who might be able to help you find people to come and talk about what is it like to have a trail, including one of those trails that is really not beyond people's backyards, and the other one for me is a trail that crosses, people have to cross to get from the road to their homes, mm-hmm. and they have lived with that. Including having to watch out that they're not. That
I would
no
say
coming that it's not a bicyclist coming when they pull in, but that's worked out well.
That would be absolutely wonderful. So we have provided information. Many of you are probably familiar with this history, but in 2008, a similar version of this. Proposal was considered, and it sort of met a roadblock, and the town board passed some resolutions with a number 11 questions. And the next year, the Caroline Trails Committee produced a really nice report addressing each of those 11 points, things like liability and risk to homeowners, crime, littering, and things like that. So it's really nice, and so that's one thing that we have, and that's available online. The other thing is that there was an official survey, a nice survey done. I think that was actually that might have been 2014 or something. But anyway, it was a survey of landowners along three trails, including the established Southeast Recway, and getting information on their reaction to the trail and how they felt about it beforehand. And like you say, Carol, it's very compelling. People really end up liking the trail. And beforehand, there's a lot of reservation and concern. And afterwards, there's, you know, widespread support. And so I know if certainly we, I think, having people who have lived with the trail come and speak would be very helpful in helping us. I feel like a big problem has been separating fear from reality, and I think that would help sort of bring a focus on the reality.
Okay, well, just let us know when it's going to be with enough time to get on our busy schedules.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone
yep.
else?
Thank you.
Thanks again for coming, Supervisor. Who else do we have? George McGonigal from the City of Ithaca. Councilman, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I just have a couple things tonight. Last week, the City Council met, and we passed an ordinance that will allow dogs in Stewart Park. Stewart Park was the only park where dogs were not allowed. And since they've opened up the waterfront trail, more people come with their dogs. The dogs have to be on a leash, and they're not allowed in the Fuertes Bird Sanctuary or within 100 feet of the Swan Pond. There's exceptions, namely seeing eye dogs, service dogs, and police working dogs. The other thing I would like to say is that IPD, Ithaca Police Department, has put out a notice that unfortunately there have been, in the past 2 weeks, 8 drug overdoses, probably heroin. There may be a bad batch of heroin in the community. One person has died. So please let your constituents know that this is the way things are right now, and there's a lot of places where people can get help in the community, and we urge people to do that. There's one other thing, and that is that McGuire family of dealerships, car dealers, are exploring the possibility of pitching to the city that they buy a piece of city-owned property in the southwest area of the city, closer to their existing dealerships. It's early days on that. That's all I've got.
Thank you. Anna.
Thank you so much, George. Would that be an exchange or of the current plot that they have on Carpenter Business Park, or and they would be interested in selling that, or they're keeping both of them and they want to develop both of them? Or
I think it's too early to say. I whatever I said would not be based on any fact.
Okay. George, your comments about the opioid crisis is very much something that we all are aware of. Just today, in my law practice, I read a death certificate from someone who had passed away due to that. And it brings it home. And if we've had those many overdoses and someone has actually died, it's a serious thing that we have to think about in our community. So I'm glad the city's looking at it. I know they're talking about their drug plan. We're talking about it in our Health and Human Services Committee and in other places. I want folks to know out there that we take it ever so seriously.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, George.
Did I miss anyone? All right, privilege of the floor for the legislature. Mr. Babcock, you had your chance.
Well, there's
one thing I left out, and that was the...
Well, you didn't use your full 3 minutes, so I'll allow you another minute if you'd like to speak to us.
Yeah, I lost train of thought. The only thing I was going to mention is the only thing I was going to mention is that I went through the appeals process for my assessment property. It took a long, long time to do that, and I won my case. I submitted a school check payment of $195. I got returned to me. My school taxes ended up being $50. And these are the main issues that I'm pointing out, the discrepancy and the abuse that I've been through with my disability.
Thank you. Privilege the floor for legislators. Dan Klein, then Will.
There are two programs that I just wanted to mention briefly to highlight that are going on in the county right now about energy efficiency. They're related, but they are different from each other. One is Heat Smart Tompkins. This is an outgrowth of Solar Tompkins, which for a couple of years facilitated group purchases of solar equipment and getting houses, residential houses, on solar energy. And they are now doing the same thing with ground source heat pumps and insulation and weatherization. So they are going around the county having meetings in different places. On Thursday in Danby, on Saturday in Enfield, Tuesday in Dryden, and it goes all the way through the end of April, all around the county. So you can find that on Heat Smart if you look that online. And then also Go Solar Tompkins, which is similar to what Solarize was, but it's being run through Cooperative Extension. It's the same idea that if there are a number of people doing it at once, getting solar power on their houses, that it's cheaper, and that they've already pre-vetted the vendors so that there's certain deals in place already. And they're doing the same thing. They're having meetings all around the county. So this Thursday in Enfield, next Wednesday at La Terrelle, next Saturday in Lansing, and on through May. So if you have any interest in finding an affordable energy efficiency package for your house, there's two excellent programs in process right now.
Thank you, Dan. Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. Actually, I have a question, and this may be for you, Mike, or perhaps Jonathan. Mr. Babcock raised a question of process, and I just wondered what we could say in terms of moving forward, what he can or should do.
It's best to address to the attorney.
Okay.
I'll be happy. Mr. Babcock mentioned Section 1182 of the real property tax law.
We can't hear you much.
Mr. Babcock mentioned Section 1182 of the real property tax law. As you may recall, it was about a year or so ago, we discussed a process for people making basically their waivers of taxes, but of penalties and interest. It went to the committee, and I think it went to the full legislature, but we established a process where basically there's a form one would get from finance. I'm sure in Mr. Babcock's case they could help him fill it out, et cetera, and it begins a process. It's a little complicated in the sense that the legal standard is kind of high. You have to show, I forget the term, but basically an overall interest of the county. And also, if it's for local municipal taxes, such as your town or village, you also need their approval for that part as well. But there is a process. Someone should contact the finance department or Rick, and they would lead him through the form. But we did establish a process about a year or so ago to do that.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
I forwarded that law to everybody involved that you mentioned. So they are aware of it, that I gave them the law, the 1182 law. So they were informed of it.
Mr. Babcock, if you want to get an exception under that section, you really have to contact finance and fill out the form or have them help you fill out the form, because it's a process that you have to go through.
Michael Lane has known this for over 6 months, and this is the first time it's been mentioned to me. See, nobody's told me. That's the reason why I'm here, because I'm trying to get information.
See, all right, well, the attorney has responded to Mr. Burbank, Mr. Babcock, and he's saying that you need to make contact with our finance department. And if you need assistance on that, we can certainly see that you get that.
Thank you, Mike.
Can I leave that?
Carol?
Yeah, probably Mr. Babcock can see that our finance director is sitting right here, Rick Snyder, and maybe you could just give your phone number, Rick, so he could give you a call.
Yeah, it's 387-4489.
Okay. No, I was suggesting that you get the number for the for our finance department, and if you need help doing that, yes.
Okay. The clerk has my email address. It can be forwarded to me through that.
Okay. Other than that, Dan Klein beat me to the punch about Eat Smart Tompkins. They really are rolling out the program. And if you had gone online even, I think, a week ago or 5 days ago to look for where the sessions are close to you, it was harder to find. They are now right up there on the website. So I urge you to refresh your browsers and check again, because there are sessions. There's definitely a session near everybody somewhere, and tours that are more prominently available on the website. And then I just wanted to say a word, as I do from time to time, for people who don't know what my practice has been as I respond to the roll call here with different answering. I am here in different languages. Our country is a melting pot, and always has been, or a gumbo, if you will, of different cultures and people from many different places around the world. Most of us have come from other places around the world. Arguably, even if you're Native American, going way back, you came from somewhere else, unless there's new research that I'm not aware of. And it just sort of to represent and recognize that we here are here to represent everybody. I started, I don't know, maybe a year ago, responding to the role in different languages. And I keep a little list in my desk, but it's getting a little bit stale. What's been interesting to observe that in some languages, in many languages, there are different ways to say I am here, with different layers of meaning to that. In Hebrew, what I use tonight, and that I used a time or two ago, is a prime example. Shalom, hello, I'm here, here I am. Hineni, I am here, in the sense that I am here, very present in this moment, almost an I exist, and I exist to be here and do this work. And many languages have similarities. French, Spanish, some of the Romance languages, you can say, I'm here, or I am here. Soy aquí, estoy aquí, in Spanish, and their equivalencies. I went to look tonight, actually a few days ago, for different ways. What are the languages that represent the countries that are represented in the executive order, orders related to a ban, and try to use so that I could use different languages. And for most of them, it's either Arabic. All of those countries, Arabic is a prominent language, but there are also many, many tribal languages that I couldn't find the translation for. But what was very interesting this time, I went to try to look up Syrian, and there are Arabic speakers and there are tribal speakers, but predominantly, particularly interestingly, in places like Damascus and Aleppo, one of the predominant languages is French, and another one is English. So we all could say, I am here, and be speaking just as well in Syria. And I thought that was an interesting little factoid that was worth knowing.
Thank you, Carol. Rich, John.
I wanted to talk for a minute about the upcoming town hall that Tom Reed has scheduled. One, I wanted to say, I think that's a really good thing that he's come to town, or going to come to town, and talk to the people who live here. given after his town halls out in the western part of this district, I went and looked at his website and looked at some of the other places you can get information, and it led me to think a bit about what this town hall would really look like. And certainly in his prior town halls, he spends a lot of time trying to get the audience to talk about their ideas and to tell him what they think they would like to see done. But then I saw him interviewed on Fox News, and you can get that on the web, where he very clearly said, you know, talking about the people in Ithaca, he's not going to change his mind about anything. And he said it pretty clearly. And if you look at his open secrets, his donations, he's getting most of his money out of district from corporations and PACs. That's where his allegiance lies. Now, I'm very happy to have him come to town, but if anybody's going to go and talk with him, and I hope a lot of us do, the emphasis really should be on having him talk and try to explain some of the positions he's taking, particularly on the ACA, I think, rather than on trying to share with him ideas you might have. These have to be very pointed questions, I think, to this gentleman, because I don't think he's really representing us. And we should take this opportunity to make clear to him that he has a responsibility to the people who actually live here. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Martha Robertson, please.
Thank you. I'll just piggyback on that just to make sure people know it's going to be held at the Southside Community Center on this coming Saturday. It's supposed to be from 8 to 9. I don't know what time the doors are going to open at Southside. We may get more information in a couple of days, but people should plan to get there, I would say, very early. And I do agree with the idea of being respectful, but I think being thoughtful about your questions, and he's he's perfected a style of listening. I won't say active listening, I will say passive listening, in the sense that he sits there and takes it, and he looks good for that, and that's fine. But it is time to get him on the record to say some things in front of us. For example, I mean, really, I think we should all study up on the proposal that the Republican House rolled out today for the Affordable Care Act. And it sounds like they're going to vote on it next week. Is that like next week? No hearings? No conversation? No alternatives? No amendments? I am stunned if that's correct. So maybe the week after, but even so, this is a huge deal. And to even do this in 2 weeks is just way too little time. I mean, this has to really be thought through the Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan fact checker agency needs to be able to weigh in on how many people might lose their insurance. They need to weigh in on how much this is going to cost, on what it's going to do to the federal deficit, among other things. So this is way too important to rush through to a vote within 2 weeks or 3 weeks even. We need to hear what Tom Reed's positions are. He probably can tell what our position is. Let's find out what his is. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to mention very quickly, there was an incident in Ludlowville of some anti-Semitic graffiti on a playground. It's unclear if that was long ago. From what I've heard, it may not have been a current thing, but at any rate, it doesn't matter. I mean, it was just discovered, but it's really disturbing. And then I heard today that there was a whole nother rash of bomb threats called into JCCs and synagogues, and especially around the country, but Rochester and Syracuse included. So especially if there's a whole bunch on one day, what does that say? Is this coordinated? Is this one very, very active person, or is this something that's coordinated? you know, this has got to stop. It's just, this is not America. So I don't want to end on that kind of note. I want to make a comment. I went and read your slides, Joe, about the accomplishments from 2016. It's great stuff. And I'll just name a couple things that you didn't maybe know. The Assessment Department for the 18th consecutive year got an Excellence in Assessing Award from New York State, the only assessing unit in the state to receive this award in all 18 years that they've been giving out that award. Office for the Aging, did anybody know that they worked with clients and the City of Ithaca to figure out a way to have user-friendly parking permits so that senior citizens don't have to struggle with the machines that some of us are still struggling with, thanks to COFA on that. And the Department of Emergency Response has established microwave radio connectivity to adjoining counties to create regional interoperability. Now, anybody who was part of this body 10, 15 years ago when we struggled to get interoperability just in our own county and struggled with with the state requirements for interoperability, et cetera, for this department to have just quietly gone out and extended our system to connect to other counties around us, just doing it, just doing their stuff without a lot of fanfare, that's a tremendous accomplishment. I just picked out three, but there are a lot of really important achievements of our departments and our staff, and thanks for putting this together, Joe.
Anna Kellis?
So I just want to add on to a little bit the conversation about the Tom Reed Town Hall meeting. It's 8 o'clock on Saturday, as Martha pointed out. There's a big conversation happening about concern in how this could be used, and I think that it's worth mentioning. I'm hoping that Tom Reed and his office are not seeing this as a potential PR stunt. If we are very upset and express things in a very aggressive way, add to his rhetoric of how he communicates and describes our community as being extremists. And that concerns me because there are some brilliant people here with very good points to make. And I feel that if we could express them in very calm and diplomatic ways and hold him to really addressing the questions that we raise, instead it could be used in a way that holds him to task. So I hope that everyone who is there breathes deep, counts to 10, and we focus on maintaining that atmosphere so that we get from him what we need, which is some real information that can be shared with the rest of our colleagues and our peers and our fellow community members around the entire district. So that's just my hope, and I know that there is a conversation happening right now, a very heated conversation, about where the facility should be located. And right now it is focused on Southside Community Center. And I hope that we can shift away from that conversation, breathe, and accept for all of us, you know, where it's located, the need for it to be located there, and focus more on coming together for, you know, the messages and the questions that we want to get out. So it's 1 hour long. We're not all going to get our questions answered. So hopefully we can keep focused on that. The other thing that I wanted to mention, I went to a conference this weekend. It was formerly known as the New York State Progressive Elected Network, and it was changed this weekend to officially be called Local Progress New York. Local Progress is a national organization with over 500 elected officials, a very rapidly growing network. And it was an amazing experience. This time they were focused on pretty heavily on discussions about sanctuary resolutions. And I shared with them our our resolution and our focus on supporting our law enforcement and shifting away from the rhetoric of what's been happening on the through the executive order, and that it was public safety for all. And what was positive about that experience is that they were thrilled to not only get the resolution, but they're could be initiatives throughout the entire state to pass the same resolution. And if that happens throughout the state, then that may influence the discussion that's happening at the Senate level at the state. And that is what we all in this legislative body were hoping for. So I just wanted you all to know that that resolution is sort of now being spread around the state. What they're focusing on right now, they're as a group, as a collective to Cuomo, adding to the resolution that we're going to be discussing tonight, is to request the extension of the millionaire's tax, adding extra brackets to that to make it more progressive. Also to increase the mansion tax. It hits homes that sell currently over $2 million to make sure that that's retained. And the last one is the carried interest. So it's a current tax right now. The income for hedge fund managers is significantly lower than income tax. There is a current carried interest tax, but it's still significantly, what they pay is significantly lower than the average American. So there is the interest of adding an extra tax on top of that. That would be the carried interest tax that would make it equitable. So those are three things that they're focusing on to sort of equalize taxes throughout the state. And with the mansion tax, the interest is that all the funding from that go directly into affordable housing. My hope is that that is something that happens throughout the state, but I think that is a great idea. So I wanted to share that those are some of the ideas. The last little bit that I'll share from that is that resolutions that are happening throughout the country are being shared in this network. And if there are any resolutions that I feel are really valuable, I'll share them with this body, and maybe we can look at them here.
Thank you. Less than being Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By the time you got to me, my colleagues had already stolen my thunder.
We're having a little trouble tonight remembering the three-minute suggested time limit.
Mr. Chair, you start talking about it when I get on board? What's up with that?
No, I was agreeing with you.
I'm going to try not to take it personally. No Girl Scout cookies for you.
I think that was...
By golly gee, I'm not going to take it personally.
Please don't.
At any rate, we can't emphasize enough. I will say that I am thrilled that our congressman is holding a town hall meeting here in Ithaca. Thank you, Congressman Reed. I'm also thrilled that it is being held in the historic South Side, the district that I represent, and right around the corner from my house. So, yes, I'll be there at 6 o'clock in the morning, Martha, lining up. I don't know that one of the things we're trying to find out are details. People are trying to ask, you know, how do you get in? Can anybody get in? What's the process? And so we're just trying to get all of that done. So I'm thankful. I'm hoping that in the future, when our congressman, you know, does return to Ithaca, that and Tompkins County, that there'll be other districts that he stops in as well. So we're happy for that. As a reminder to everyone, those of you who might have just tuned in, 8 o'clock Saturday morning, this Saturday, March 11th, at the Southside Community Center, 8 to 9, 305 South Plain Street, right on the corner of Plain and the historic Cleveland Avenue. So show up and let's give our congressman a warm welcome. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm being I'm not being Mike, and ask the questions that we want answers to. Thank you, Rich, for stating it so eloquently. I also want to give a shout out to, you know, we do good things in Tompkins County, and they ought to be recognized. I want to give a shout out and congratulations to our superintendent, Dr. Louville Brown, who just yesterday, won the New York State Superintendent 2017 Superintendent of the Year Award. Mm-hmm. This award is given by the New York State Council of School Superintendents, so his colleagues, per se. So You know, Dr. Brown is not, you know, one who is very out in public touting a lot of what's happening in the schools and what he's doing and some of the good things he's bringing here. But he certainly is being recognized by his colleagues and deserving of our recognition as well. So I wanted to shout that. My time is not up yet, Mike. I'm just letting you know. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Mike Sigler.
Just a couple things. I was, too, so impressed with that, that he won that. I mean, we are in a giant state, a lot of school districts.
Yes.
And the man is a great dresser. So
he is sharp.
Put all that together. But no, really impressive. I thought that was just an amazing accomplishment. And I want to thank, I want to give a shout out, actually, and I don't do this to the press often, but to the Ithaca Voice, because that's how I found out about that. And, you know, McGonigal brought up the opioid issue, like that was today. Found out about that today from the Ithaca Voice. So just kind of getting all my news from there right now about Ithaca and about, you know, Ludlowville, about Lansing. Wanted to talk a little bit about the graffiti that was found. I want to thank some of the members of the community. I mean, Irene Weisner and Carol and a couple other people. Really, you know, there was a service at both, like, the temple up in North Trip Hammer and the one downtown. And there was a community meeting in Lansing on Saturday that was pulled very, very quickly together. About 50 people, I think, showed up to that, was my understanding. And again, short notice, so not everybody could make it that wanted to make it. But I thought that the outpouring of support for the Jewish community in our area, and really kind of for the whole community, this is not just an incident against one group. It really is an incident against our entire community. It's not, you know, I don't like the segmentation because really it does impact so many people. My hope is that this turns out, I mean, it's being investigated. My hope is it just was some kids that just don't understand the ramifications of that. And I bring that up because, you know, I was in church on Sunday, and somebody who I respect very much, I'm not going to use her name, but she told a story about when she was a kid and how, you know, kids would draw things, and they drew a swastika, and they just didn't understand what that meant, you know, to so many people. They just didn't, they don't put that together, and I don't know. Maybe that's what we need to work on, too, is, you know, the slogan, never forget, isn't just a slogan. It's, you know, you really got to believe that. And I want the Jewish community and really the whole community to understand that myself and the people on this legislature, we live that. I mean, I will never forget that. You know, I have stories. You know, my uncle was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner in World War II. You know, I listened to World War II stories and what happened and about how they went into the camps. I mean, I remember watching that movie, Life is Beautiful, and thinking, wow, hold somebody that encapsulated something like that. And that's where the arts really do provide such a good filter for that, or such a good lens for that kind of experience that, frankly, none of us lived through. I didn't live through it, I mean, obviously. So just wanted to reassure the community that it's not something that was taken lightly. It was something that's being investigated, and clearly something that we will invest our lives in, I think. You know, I don't think things like this will ever go away, but certainly I think it shows how we address them as well, the kind of people and the kind of community we are. So, thank you.
Thank you. Carol's asked to speak again. Anyone who hasn't spoken first, Dooley, I'll take you.
Thank you. Going back quite a ways in time this evening, I think that the advice given to, I'm so bad with names.
Babcock.
Mr. Babcock, thank you. To try to make use of the process that we came up with for appealing fines is not the right direction to send him. It's an ADA problem, and I think he should seek help through, I don't know whether it's our Office of Human Rights or not, but I think that the process that we designed is not focused on a disability complaint at all. So I think there needs to be a different approach for him. And I'm not prepared to design it right now, but I think we need to come up with a different method for him to use. The reason I had planned to raise my hand and also included in this commentary has to do with the fact that I'm your representative to the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the ITCTC, and there was a meeting this afternoon of the policy committee. And the state representative from DOT, the regional state representative, was Mark Frechette. He was there today. And we discussed the New York Bridge program, which was a surprise to regional DOTs, just as it was to us. It was an idea that the governor came up with to have Bridge New York handled at the absolute top level of DOT to award monies. And the New York Bridge program allowed towns to apply for money for bridges within their municipality that are actually county bridges, and in particular a South George Road bridge and Freeze Road bridge in Dryden were applied for. Mr. Frechette was surprised that the town of Dryden applied for this money for the county bridges. He fully expected the county to say, yes, yes, that's nice, let us handle that contract, Dryden. And he was surprised that the county hadn't actually stepped in and said that we want to handle that contract, which is allowed. So there's a little bit of time left because Dryden hasn't signed a contract yet with the New York Bridge program. So if we want to be the ones handling these projects for our bridges, we have time to do that if we act this week, probably. And then he said he was surprised also at the regional level because this state DOT took over two bridges that the region handles. They're state bridges, and the region has always been the one to decide on those, and they have been taken out of his hands by state DOT at the top level, the executive level. So he is trying to recapture two of his bridge projects to be the one to decide about. So all of this innovative funding that our governor comes up with is happening not just to counties, but it's happening in so many different areas. I thought that was interesting. The other thing I learned at the MPO today is that finally, with various pedestrian safety projects, which are also newly funded or proposed, the funding streams haven't been decided yet, will be at pedestrian intersections, some of them signalized, many of them, or most of them, not signalized. And for the first time ever, the state is going to use or allow the use of color to distinguish pedestrian crosswalks. But it's not a bright color. It's a dull red that they will allow. So we may see some of those in the city soon. I don't know.
Thank you, Julie.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out we have the president of our community college to give us a presentation tonight. I have Carol and Martha would like a second chance. Can we hold it to a minute, Carol, Martha?
Two things. Several people mentioned the Jewish incident. I was not involved in organizing any response, I just want to correct also that I appreciate that people, as a member of the Jewish community, I appreciate that people have come out and said, oh, my gosh, this happened here. But I also want to point out that around the nation and maybe here as well, people of many faiths and backgrounds are faced every day. You know, it's nothing new in the Jewish community here. We have bodyguards outside of all of our larger services and have had to for years because you never know It's not the first time there have been swastikas and awful things written on the temple wall, for that matter, not recently. But we did not hold a special service at the downtown temple. It's right across the street, by the way, if anybody ever wants to show up. It's a lovely Friday night, especially 8 o'clock in the certain times of the year, and I think it gets earlier in the summer, or no, winter, middle of winter. If it's really cold, it can switch to 6:15, so you look on the website. But it's a lovely service with a lot of sort of meditative singing, and it's not an appropriate place to bring and try to talk about that. You know, meetings should happen at other places, but anybody who ever wants to come, I'll meet you there. And let you know when you're supposed to stand. You know, you just follow the crowd, when you stand up and when you sit down, and men cover their heads as just a sign of respect, you know, as I would do, you know, when I'm in any culture, what's the custom? Do women have to cover our shoulders or whatever it is? So I appreciate that people have come out, but since then, you know, Sikhs have been attacked around the country, and people of Indian descent, you know, Indian descent, whether they're American-born or not, are experiencing this. So it's the message is really, boy, you know, we need the culture of respect, and how do we teach that in schools, and how do we hold the whole community to the standard? I just on the Tom Reed meetings, I just have a question. Maybe it's a somewhat rhetorical question. This is Tom Reed. Am I correct that this is Tom Reed's meeting rather than the community's meeting? So he, our congressperson, is going to set the agenda, issue a press statement afterwards. I don't want people to come in with the expectation that maybe anything that we do or don't do or react or stay calm or sound upset, you know, is going to change the message coming out of there, which is that which is been consistent over his whole time in office and running, which is that somehow those people in Tompkins County, again, an other, we are an other, those people in Tompkins County are somehow different than the rest of the district. And so I hope that, you know, so that, and the press, as the press, you know, does and should do, you know, takes the press releases of those who conduct meetings and the word of their reaction to meetings, and that will be in the press. And if people want different press, hopefully the press will be there and watching and can
we move on
giving the other side of the story as well. And maybe people who are going to attend might want to be ready with press materials as well. So thank you.
Martha.
Quick question to Dooley. So you said if the county were to step in to handle the contract, the amount of money wouldn't change. Is that what you said? Okay, so what happens next? And there's also George Road in the town of Dryden. So the George Road Bridge. So what happens next?
Well, at the moment, the town expects to sign a contract with the state to handle these projects, and they're listed as rehabilitation or replacement, and the county's position heretofore has been rehab, not replacement. But my understanding is that the town's approach is to hire a consultant to come up with a bunch of options, and they will choose one. So the outcome is possibly going to be different than were we the ones to be running the contract. And we have a small window of time to let the state know that we want to be the ones that they sign the contract with.
Could I ask, Joe, I mean, Jeff Smith is probably out. You said his father had died. Can I ask that you follow this up? Because there's been a huge amount of confusion between, it's, you know, our bridge, and it would be really nice if the county were at least an equal partner in deciding what happens to our bridge. I mean, great that the town got the application and got the money, but this has been a really confusing process.
I will follow up with Jeff. He is out. I expect he's going to be out until probably Thursday or Friday. So for the first time I'll have a chance to talk to him is then, late in the week.
It sounds like this is, so this was at ITCTC, right? So it seems like calling Fernando and then Jason Leifer, I mean, you know, explaining.
I guess I find it a little odd that the same state that made this grant to the town would now be saying that there should be a contract with the county instead of the town. I mean, that's kind of confusing advice that the state's providing. So, again, we've been yielding to the town. They secured the grant. We have offered assistance. We provided technical assistance. We will be involved in the way that bridge is designed through the maintenance agreement that we have to sign with the town. So there are still controls that we will have over the project. All that said, I'll talk to Jeff when he gets back again. I think it'll be Thursday or Friday.
You know, if you got a grant to remodel my house, I might thank you for the money, but, like, really want to be the one deciding what you... All right. Thank you.
I do want to point out that there was a meeting at DOT in Syracuse at which Jeff Smith was there along with the... I believe the supervisor of the town of Dryden, the highway superintendent, and others, and that was a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know what's coming down now, but apparently that meeting went pretty well was the feedback I heard.
But this, we have a process. We have a committee that deals with these things. You know, things come through the committee to the legislature. It's just all I'm asking, and this is another wrinkle.
Well, Joe said he'll look into it. All right. Thank you all very much. I'd like to open the floor now to the president of our community college, Dr. Carl Haynes, who is here to give us his annual State of the College report. Welcome, Carl. It's kind of bittersweet because apparently after all the State of the College reports that we've heard over the years, this may be your final one in front of us. I hope it's not, doesn't mean it's the last time that you'll come and visit us and speak to us, but we want to bear that in mind, and so we're all ears tonight.
Well, it will be my last State of the College report. But remember, I will be back asking you for a budget approval sometime in June, I think. So it won't be my last time here. I am passing around my annual report, and I have some remarks that I want to share before I kind of walk through a little bit of that report with you. The one pager that I sent around is the kind of the lobbying position that we have this year for our state budget support, and I'll comment on that at the end of my remarks. Basically, what I want to do tonight, I'll just give you a brief overview, is to share with you a few what I call brutal facts to kind of set the context, if you will, for our strategic priorities. Then I'll comment on these four strategic priorities that we have at the college right now, highlight a few of the other things that are in my annual report, and then bring you up to date on a couple of other things briefly toward the end, and, of course, then be happy to answer any questions you might have. Brutal facts is something that Jim Collins talks about in his books, Good to Great or Built to Last. You may be familiar with some of those books. He's written extensively on what makes organizations excellent over a period of decades. And one of the characteristics that he identifies is a willingness to address brutal facts in the organization. And they could be external competitive factors or environmental factors, or they could be internal factors and realities as well that are relevant to their respective companies. Well, in developing our strategic priorities, we've done the same. And what I want to share with you tonight is some of those brutal facts with you, primarily in the case tonight, external factors. There are, of course, a lot of internal factors as well, but the level of detail there would be beyond the scope of my presentation tonight. The first brutal fact that I want to share is that of declining state support for our community colleges. Recent base aid increases have not resulted in increased state support for the college. We experienced decreases in base aid rate from 2009-10 through 2011-12. And while we have had some modest increases in the past few years, this year we are just $22 per FTE in base aid more than we were in 2007-08, 9 years ago. And the portion of our budget supported by the state is approximately 25%. Compared to the legislative expectation of being at least a third, and actually in the early 70s, the state legislature approved 40% or mandated 70% of support for community colleges if we all agreed to be full opportunity campuses, which we all did at that time. So we'd be happy to get back to one-third, but it'd be wonderful if we ever could see 40% again. Second brutal fact, of course, is the limited ability of our county sponsors. Sponsor support during that same nine-year period has declined from 26.9 to 24.6%, about 2.5%, with that largely bolstered by out-of-county chargeback revenue. During three years of that nine-year period, the sponsors provided zero increase, including this year. And, of course, we understand the 2% cap is a limiting factor, as well as numerous other state-mandated requirements that are facing county government today. Third brutal fact is enrollment decline. 85% of our revenues are directly related to revenue. As I've been sharing our campus community during our current challenge, when our enrollment gets a cold, our budget gets pneumonia, and right now we have double pneumonia. I get often asked about what's driving enrollment decline. And by the way, as I think I've shared other years with you, this isn't just something unique to Tompkins-Cortland. It's happening at other community colleges around the state and around the country. I'll identify four factors just very briefly. I can expand on these later if you'd like. But there are increased restrictions on financial aid, particularly with respect to student and parent loans. Media coverage has been a factor, particularly with the kinds of articles that we read about questioning the value of higher education and oftentimes linked to the significant debt load that students have. Now, this doesn't speak to the students of community colleges that are graduating with significant debt load, but nevertheless, those messages have a chilling effect, I think, on many families that may be sending their students to a community college. State-operated campuses have lowered their standards in terms of entry requirement in order to meet this increasing competitive environment that higher education is facing. We know for sure that a number of students that 5 years ago would have been attending community colleges because their SAT scores wouldn't have been sufficient to enter a state-operated campus are now being admitted there, and they would have been coming to our community colleges, or TC3 in particular. And, of course, an improving economy always drives a lot of people who may be attending college to update their skill levels because of challenging economic times. As the economy improves, those people are getting jobs, and they cause another factor in our enrollment decline. So these are just some of the factors that are kind of a perfect storm of concerns. With respect to our particular enrollment, our enrollment peaked in 2011-12 at 4,000 full-time equivalent students. In the past 5 years, including this year, our enrollment has declined by 11.7%. That's our bottom line total enrollment. However, our core enrollment, this is our fall-spring enrollment, has declined by 29.9% during that same five-year period. Now, there has been variation over the years. For example, last year, our total enrollment was actually up by a little over 1% due to the growth of our concurrent enrollment program. This year, our overall enrollment is projected to decline by 5.6%, while our core fall-spring enrollment has declined by 8.5%. It's included in that previous number that I mentioned. We did not expect a decline of this magnitude, particularly given the slight improvement that we saw last year. Of this five-year period, this year was the largest one-year decline. out-of-county students and transfer students was down more this year than in recent years. As a matter of fact, transfer students was the lowest level in the last 15 to 20 years since we've been tracking during our current enrollment model. And this is significant because this, again, is an indication that upper division colleges that normally would have been requiring students that are on probation or suspension or whatever to return to a community college, get their academic act together, and then return are now keeping those students. And that's having an impact, obviously, on us. The next brutal fact is increased demands for accountability and assessment for SUTI, the state, federal resources. Every year I do a compliance report for our Board of Trustees, and in that report we are usually in full compliance, but the cost of that is 14 full-time equivalent staff members in order to achieve all those compliance requirements. Next brutal fact is the increased use of technology for both academic and course delivery, as well as a wide range of student support services. These are essential in this time of social media and expectations of today's students, but costly to keep up with, and we're experiencing rapid changing developments in technology. The next brutal fact, of course, is the need to continual curricular modification and development to respond to both student interest and employer needs. We have a new applied technology, a spam call, I'm sure. A new degree program in applied technology that's currently at the SED for approval, and which we'll be promoting this fall. In recent months, we've been hosting a dialogue with our Board of Trustees, with our area superintendents from the two area BOCES, as well as with partners, with employers from representing the manufacturing and computer sectors, and from our local counties, to explore current and anticipated workforce needs. We're also kind of exploring the whole trend toward micro-credentials, short-term credit, non-credit certificates. These pressures to address various student success metrics, our accountability and assessment requirements, as well as striving to at least stabilize our enrollment, and that directly relates to our financial health, this has led to a broad range of college-wide discussions that have helped us reach consensus on the following strategic priorities, including a set of action plans that are currently underway. And I want to stress, as I kind of morph into my comments on our strategic priorities, is that retention is a primary goal here, as you'll see as I walk through these four strategic priorities with you. You know, if we were to have a 1 or 2% increase in new students, while that would be welcome, of course, it's a very small increase in revenue compared to a 3 or 4% increase in retention rates of our students. I've demonstrated that to our college community in dollars and cents, and it's a hundredfold difference in terms of revenue for the college by improving retention. So that's the focus, as you'll see, in our strategic priorities. I direct you to that first page, if you will, on the insert or on the inside first cover. The four priorities that we have, of course, is the first semester matters. I'm going to talk about each of these as we walk through, because each page following addresses more of these in detail. But then there's support for the high-need students, our marketing efforts, and enhanced by information availability and so on. And, of course, there's a challenge that we have identified there for each of these. If you flip over then to the next two-page spread that talks about the first semester matters, I'm just going to highlight a couple of things. I first draw your attention to the format here of the report this year. On the left-hand page, of course, is the need with a couple of paragraphs that describe what this all is all about in terms of the first semester matters. Then we have the critical questions that's guiding our various strategic priority initiatives and committees on campus, and then what we've accomplished so far. Again, we're just into our second year with these initiatives. But on the left-hand panel, I draw your attention to that first paragraph, which comments that 90% of fall first-time full-time students who are in good standing return the next semester, while only about half of those students who wind up on probation at the end of that semester will return the next semester. That alone gives you the information, and the data that we presented to our college community was compelling in terms of saying we need to have a whole host of different initiatives targeted to that first semester to help students succeed that first semester, avoid getting on probation, because if they wind up on probation, the odds are they're going to be wind up on suspension the following year and not able to return. The first semester, by the way, begins before the semester, first semester. You know, oftentimes we've had some new initiatives here that start working with students even before the semester begins. And one of those, under the accomplishments that you'll see on the right-hand, the bottom portion of that right-hand page, is the Vector Scholars Program. This is a program that's funded by support from Arthur Kukas, and it really targets students and supports them coming into the college 3 weeks before the semester starts, going through an intensive program with mentors, with faculty mentors and peer mentors. I won't go into the whole description of the program, but I would point out that the scholars that had this the first semester, the success rate was 40% higher than a comparison group, and almost 90% of the students that were in that program the first fall returned the following spring. So the program works, but it's very labor intensive, and it requires, if we didn't have the resources that come from the resource, the grant that the funding, actually, I should say, that Mr. Kukas provided, we just simply wouldn't have been able to do that on taxpayer and tuition dollars. But this year we have 40 students in that program, and our goal is to sustain that at least in the foreseeable future with 40 students. The Pathways program, again supported by Arthur Kukas' endowment, is another program targeted to adult students who are returning to college after having never had an experience or having had a bad experience at college, and helping them to get in. That is achieving similar kinds of success metrics as well. The second strategic priority, of course, is support for high-need students. And when you look at the need paragraph there in the left-hand column, that's addressing, of course, the greater diversity we're experiencing in our student body. Younger students, more diverse in terms of geography, race, ethnicity, and more likely to come from low income. And also, when you speak in terms of low income families, oftentimes students that are first time college students, okay, their families never went to college. A lot of times that means they haven't got a lot of support at home for attending to college or how to navigate all that entry-level process. We have, again, under accomplishments, I won't go through all the critical questions here. You can look at those at your leisure. But in terms of what we've already accomplished, we're rolling out a new metric called Full Measure Education. It's an app. About 80-some percent of our students have one of these. And this will be an app on their phone that'll give them a pushed-out message, okay, anytime that they have a form that's due or some paper that's due or they're missing an appointment or whatever. If it's some kind of form that they need for registration or financial aid or whatever it might be, there will be a link to that form so they can fill it right on their phone and send it in. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible. And this app will, again, be available to them starting during the initial application process all the way through until they graduate. So our faculty and other staff and student success people will be able to use this to try to stay connected with students, keep them aware of what their expectations are, and hopefully increase a level of responsiveness and success for our students. And the right-hand column there, there's also a mention of an early alert system that we're working with. And I'd also draw your attention to that open educational resources, not directly related, but I think very helpful. That basically is a program we started. We've gotten a lot of statewide recognition for this, where our folks have, our faculty, I think the numbers are there, 23 courses, but over 100 sections, where all the course material is fully online at no cost to the student. So there's no need for textbooks, for them to buy $100, $200, $300 textbooks. Our estimate right now, in the last 3 years since we started this, we've saved students over $600,000 in textbook costs. So that's a factor in helping them being able to, because a lot of times the students don't have the money to buy their books, then they don't. And then by the time they get into the third or fourth week of the semester, they're so far behind, you know, again, they wind up either failing, dropping out, or whatever. So this is, again, an effort to try to keep the material in front of the students, keep them on track, and keep them moving forward with a success academically. The third strategic priority has to do with marketing. We did an independent market research that identified the college. I won't go through all the details of how the methods that they use and so on, but it was very gratifying to us that we came out with very high in our academic reputation, and that we're recognized as having challenging academics, a strong sense of community, high-quality faculty, and desirable academic programs. And one of the accomplishments here is that we developed what we call personas. I'll just mention each of them for you, but we have five of them. One of them is local traditional students. Another one is local adult students. And then we have adult convenient students, in other words, people wanting to think about online courses and that sort of thing. Urban diverse students. And then we have what we call donut students. Now, what that really means is that those are students, the traditional students, in all of the counties that surround Tompkins County. So if you think of Tompkins and Cortland County being the whole of the donut, then these are the students that are from all the counties around us. So what we've developed is very targeted social media connections with these different personas that would relate to each of them, different kinds of view books, targeted special admit days, and various other kinds of initiatives that reach each of these students in a very different kind of way depending upon their respective personas. So that's one of some of the things that we're doing to try to address and respond to this incredibly competitive higher education market that we're involved with. The next one, of course, is the enhanced information, and this basically is the whole idea that you need to have good data to know what you're doing throughout the organization. We've been very data-driven in much of what we're doing in the last few years, and I would mention that if you you can see the link there if you want to go on our website, and we have one interactive data where for enrollment where you can faculty or anybody in the college or any of you, if you wanted to look at enrollment in any of our programs or how it connects with various kinds of demographic factors, you can look at all that information, and it's very helpful for a lot of the planning that we do. And then we have other kinds of reports that are being populated on that website as well. So plus this data that we're developing is going to be incredibly helpful for our Middle States reaccreditation process that we're right in the middle of right now. We're looking at the Board of Trustees each month this week, this spring, this semester, are hearing reports from our various committees, and we hope that by December to have our self-study report completed. That'll be submitted to the Middle States Commission, and by a year from this April, we'll have a self-study or a Middle States team visit the campus and then render a judgment about reaccreditation. We've been applauded really for our assessment and accreditation in the past, so I don't expect that to be any different this year, this coming year, but it is nevertheless very important, and part of our success, I think, is because we've been very forthright with our data and our analysis and our assessment information. The next, I'll just comment briefly on some of the other accomplishments and highlight those on the next page. Our customized training, we're very strong with that, working with a number of businesses and the companies in the area. Our study abroad trips, I would highlight there. The Middle States self-study report that's being done down at the bottom of the page. Some new programs that we're looking at in audio design and production and digital media production to replace some of our current communications programs. Again, the kinds of things that we need to be doing to keep these curricula fresh and responsive to industry needs. I'll highlight the child care center. I think you all have heard about that before. The good news here is that the $1.5 million that we need for the state for the construction part of the construction match is in the state budget this year. So when the state budget is approved on April 1, we anticipate we will have what we need to construct this daycare center. We're also actively out and about asking people whoever will listen to me for donations to our endowment campaign, and I can say that we have $1 million campaign underway, and we're half at the halfway mark. We have $500,000 raised already, and we hope to it would be my goal to try to get the other half done before I get done, but nevertheless some of that may drift over into the following year. The big news on this child care center, of course, we're going to be able to address infants, which we now can't serve. It'll be triple the numbers of children that we'll be able to serve We are among one of only 7% of the child care facilities in the country that is nationally accredited, and that's noted in the report here. And of course, it's really fully integrated with our child development program on campus. The big news, of course, serving the children, but this we see as a major factor in helping to address our enrollment challenge. Because so many of our students, if they have children or become pregnant and have a child, wind up having to drop out to be able to take care of the child because they don't have child care or can't afford it, particularly for infant care. And interestingly enough, some of the first telephone calls that somebody will make when they call the college for admissions, they call the daycare center first to see if they can, if we have room for them, and too often we don't. So we believe this is going to help address our enrollment challenge as well. The next page you'll find particularly interesting, I hope, but Christine Shanks, who's one of our computer graphics faculty member, we're highlighting her work here. One of her highlights, of course, is the work that Zach Kenyon did. I think Mike was out at the college when we honored, and I think Joe was there as well. We honored Zachary for having designed the winning logo for the Tompkins County Bicentennial Commission. And if you look down at on the right-hand page, the list of things that she and her students have done for the projects here, it is, and I haven't seen all these. As I look at all these projects, I've got to get around town and get to see some of these. But a printed map that's showing the evolution of transportation that altered the landscape of Tompkins County, an interactive walking tour, remarkable bridges. I'm not going to read all those for you, but it's a long list, and she and her students have really produced these kinds of projects that I think are going to be a part of the bicentennial celebration, I think, and probably part of our history museum as well. So a lot of good work there, and right now she and her students are involved in a very different but parallel kind of projects, set of projects over in Cortland County. So with that, I'll just highlight a couple of other things very briefly. I think by this point, everybody's aware that presidential search is underway. The first candidate was here the last 2 days. It's one of the reasons I was a couple of minutes late getting here tonight, because I had a chance to chat with her. And another candidate coming later this week, third candidate next week. And so I hope you all do avail yourself of the opportunities to meet the candidates when they come into the communities. And hopefully that process will work itself through where we have the SUNY Board of Approval, along with our Board Approval, of course, by early May. Target date, I think, is May 2nd, with the prospect that the new person would come on board sometime in July, early July, I hope, and give us a month or two to transition together. And secondly, I think, I don't know if it's in the news today or not, but I think I sent out a notice to some that the TC3 Adjunct Association was approved and certified by PERB, and that we just received notice on that, I think, on Thursday or Friday. And so we're now ready to begin. But my only comment on that is that it was in June of 2015, okay, 15. We're in 17 now, okay, 2015, okay, that we had the hearing where each side presented their case before PERB. We were told that we would have, within 90 days, the administrative law judge committed to having an answer. That 90 days was up 18 months ago, okay? And there has been no explanation at all in terms of why PERB took 18 months to render a decision that they said would be rendered within 90 days. I think that's unconscionable on their part. But nevertheless, we got an answer. The Adjunct Association now is fully certified. And as soon as they are organized, I think they have some organizing to do, then we'll begin our negotiations with them. So in closing, I just want to say in the context, I think, of what I shared in my opening remarks about the brutal facts and some of what we're addressing at the college, I think it's pretty clear that higher education is in a very challenging time with reduced public support. And for many sectors, we are, of course, enrollment stressed. We are an extremely labor-intensive enterprise, which makes reducing costs and overhead by use of technology or automation very limiting. Enrollment pressures at community colleges are particularly severe, as I previously mentioned. These challenges will likely continue in the foreseeable future, which will require us to continually adapt to these financial realities while concomitantly striving to achieve complex range of student success outcomes that often rely on additional faculty staff interventions to obtain positive outcomes. I hope that what I've shared with you tonight reassures you, as our county sponsors, that your community college is fully aware of the very strong headwinds that we're facing. Most importantly, that our strategic priority action plans and related initiatives are indeed responding to these realities. Tompkins-Cortland Community College embraces and indeed manifests a culture of creativity and innovation, adaptability in meeting our challenges, careful planning that relies on transparency and engagement of all members of our faculty and staff, and an extraordinarily talented faculty, administrative staff, and support staff. It is the collective synergy of all of these factors, in spite of our challenges that we face, that will continue Tompkins-Cortland, your community college, on its journey of greatness. So with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions. Thank you.
Carl, thank you for that brutal report.
Right.
But it's very honest, and we understand the challenges that are ahead for not only the community college, but for us, our sponsoring counties as well. Let's start taking some questions with Anna Kellis, then Martha, then Peter.
I guess I just wanted to start by saying, thank you for the privilege of even having a year to work with you. I'm so glad that I was elected before you retired. You are one of the most eloquent and impassioned people that I have met in the field of academia. And more important than any of that, your heart and dedication to this is so inspiring. So thank you.
Thank you.
For all of your commitment. Big shoes to fill. My one question, I have a million questions, but I'm sure all my colleagues have many as well, so I'll just stick to the one. One of the budget items for the state right now is 2 years of free, 2 years of free funding college. For anyone whose family earns less than $125,000. And I'm curious, I've heard some people's response to this that would hurt community colleges in particular because people would even more decide to go to four-year colleges. I've heard other perspectives, but I would really like to hear your perspective on that. It's in potential impact that you see.
Yeah, that's a trickier question to respond to than you might think.
That's why.
Yeah, I know. As presently laid out by the governor, I think there is some risk, okay, for the community colleges. First of all, when you look at this from a national perspective, this is the only state, okay, that has offered a free tuition program of some type. That is anything, let me rephrase that. All the other states that have done this, it's been only for community colleges. Okay, we're the only state that's offering it for the state-operated campuses as well. So that's creating a whole different kind of competition, if you will, for those students. And then when you look at the requirement that the student has to use all the other aid that they have before the scholarship, if you will, kicks in.
The impact's really small.
The impact, if you think of it in terms of first of all, we have the TAP program, very unique in the whole country. I don't think there's any other state that has a similar program to TAP. So we have, I should have had the numbers in front of me, but a significant percentage of our students, where their full tuition is paid by TAP, okay, because of their low income. And or they'll get some level of TAP. It goes all the way up to $70,000, and they'll still get some TAP. Now, it may only be $500. I think is a minimum that they would get $250 a semester. And then they have to use Pell. So if they're Pell eligible, then all their Pell money has to be applied as well. Now, what does a student use Pell money for? They use that for living, transportation, books, childcare, other kinds of needs that they may have. And if they have to use that before they get their scholarship, then whatever scholarship, so if they do get a scholarship, okay, then there's nothing left over for the rest of their needs. Okay, so there's other ideas being talked about. I think I don't know where the legislature is. As a matter of fact, I have just scheduled a meeting, or I have a meeting with Assemblywoman Lifton
Friday, I think, this Friday. And so it'll be interesting to see her take. I've heard secondhand that, she and some of our other legislative representatives are not supporting it, at least in its current form. And whether or not there is some kind of alternative being negotiated, I think the governor partly is open to wanting, he wants to get something out of this. So I suspect there's probably some kind of compromise or some kind of, and I don't know what that's going to look like, but hopefully some kind of a compromise that would be a little more beneficial, I think, for the students that really need it.
It would be really disappointing if it doesn't increase the actual number of people going but creates a competition instead between schools. So I hope, if you come up ultimately with some plan that you think that it would be good for us to push or promote, please, I would love to hear it.
Yeah. Right now, I don't know what that would be. It's interesting that one of the other states came out where they did the two-year free, but the first 2 years of it was the community college. And then if they qualified, that they got the second 2 years of upper division college, incentivizing students to if they wanted to go on. But that's not the way this program is set up. So right now, we're not building anything into our enrollment planning that's going to assume an uptick based on free tuition.
Let's go to Martha.
It does seem complicated. We met with Senator O'Mara, and I'm sure you're reaching out to the senators too, but he didn't say a lot, but it sounded like the Senate wasn't keen on it, if that's I don't know if that's a technical term, but at least in the form it's in. I was a little confused with your enrollment numbers, but that's, I get the main message. I am curious about your international students, because I know especially over the, are they mostly in the summer you get international students, or do they stay year-round? And I know that was always a big part of your revenue. Is that being affected by the president's immigration and entry
Actually, in our case, it's not. Most of our, first of all, the Global Connections program, okay, that is primarily kind of a summer focused. Even though I think that maybe, I'm hoping that'll kind of go through a transition, because we're looking to hire partly within the next couple of weeks a new senior officer to lead our global initiatives on campus. But right now that's very. South America, Central America centric, if you will, primarily, not exclusively. As far as our regular international students, what we call our traditional international students, we don't have any students from the countries that are mentioned in the president's executive order. So that hasn't had an impact. That said, and really unrelated to that matter, our regular national students have been declining. And we only recently started really analyzing what's going on with that and trying to figure out, why. And what we're discovering is that some of our competitors are, I'm going to use the word discounting. They use the word scholarship, the double part of the tuition that is basically creating a very competitive environment in terms of the lower cost than for international students. And so we're analyzing that. I don't know quite what we'll be able to do to address that. We have to do something that'll be revenue neutral. Right now in our budget situation, we can't have anything that's going to reduce revenues. But there's always that tricky equation of, if we were to, provide some kind of discount under some certain kinds of conditions for international students to incentivize them, would it be offset by an increased amount of enrollment that would then offset whatever that revenue loss might be? We're analyzing it. But I think we've got to do something to try to re-incentivize, but it's gone down in the last 10 years significantly. Our Global Connections has done well. Okay, that can the partnerships we have with other universities and that sort of thing, that continues to do well.
Thank you.
I have Peter Stein next.
Hi, thanks. That was a lot to absorb in a very short time. As I was listening to you, I don't know if you remember, I used to be a professor at Cornell.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
I got a pretty good understanding of admissions at Cornell and what you do and what kind of people you try to come into the university. And if you ask rather quickly, you know, what is it you look for at Cornell when you're on an admissions board? You're looking for a student that will survive, a student that will do well, okay? And you try to find, you try to admit only students that you think will not fail at it. Mm-hmm. Is it the same thing with you? Do you have an admissions system whereby you examine the credentials of the applicants and see if you think that they can survive or the probability of their surviving, or is it that you first come, first served, or how is it done?
We're an open access institution. So, in other words, we aren't a selective institution like Cornell.
Right, I understand that.
So the kinds of criteria really are the assessment we do of their basic academic skills. If they're deficient in their academic skills, they're still allowed to enroll, but then they have to, are required to enroll in what we call pre-college level courses. And so our basic skills courses, okay, when primarily in the math and reading and English areas. So that's where we're targeting a tremendous amount of our focus right now is in those course areas and trying to – and it's a complex kind of thing. Oftentimes it's not the intellect of the students that sometimes is a factor that we're having to deal with, but it's all the other kind of cultural kinds of experiences that they bring with having being maybe low income or coming from areas where they just have not had any kind of encouragement in terms of doing their work and going to class on time and that's those kinds of soft skills, I guess I would call them. So, you know, that's where we spend a lot of time. You know, students will, you know, the car will break down. They need $100 and they can't fix their car because they don't have $100, so they'll quit college. You know, for none of us here would we think that way, okay? But so that's the immediate reaction that students have. So, that, you know, again, if they reach out and get help, we have a fund, okay? They can provide them with $100, okay, so they can get their car fixed and continue to come to college. So we have it requires, and that's where that labor intensity comes in. It's both advisement, our student success office, our counseling office, our student success folks, our student activities folks, you know, working with students, engaging with students to help them, if they have these kinds of issues, help them problem solve so that they stay focused on their academics and succeed. So it's I drifted away a bit from your question, Peter, but it's a much more complex kind of set of circumstances we're dealing with than whether a student's got a 800 SAT or a 790.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that when I asked the question. But really what the question I was getting at is that I think when I was on admissions at Cornell, I would never admit anyone who I think could not do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the issues that you mentioned, you know, are also present at Cornell, and not everyone comes from the same household and so on and so forth. But certainly with admissions people, that was something that I think we all agreed on, is we're not going to admit any student that we think is going to fail or that we don't think has a good chance of surviving.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing at
no,
your
it's
institution?
Not. It's different.
It's not.
You know, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
Let me tell you a story, okay? You know, some of the criteria that you would use, okay, would be maybe, you know, their high school grades, okay? They're poor grades, you know, you might say, well, you know, odds are the students aren't going to make it in college, okay? They need to take, you know. On the other hand, you don't know the rest of the story, and you don't know who's really going to step up and succeed in adult. There just isn't any crystal ball. I'll tell you one story, okay? I mean, maybe you've heard me tell this story before, so if you have. But, you know, it's a young man who became renowned around our campus. His name is Iggy. I'll tell my Iggy story. Okay, he came from a family grew up in this, New York City. When he was a junior in high school, his father left the family, and he had younger brothers and sisters, and he had to go to work and work two jobs in order to help his mother take care of his family. His grades suffered. Okay, so when he graduated from high school, his high school guidance counselor told him, "You'll never make it. Don't even bother. Don't even think about going to college because your grades aren't good enough to go to college anyplace." So he didn't. He continued working to try to help his family work jobs, help his mother take care of his younger siblings. He finally got encouraged by a friend that he ought to go, that he really should go to college. Through that friend, he found us at Tompkins Corlin. And he thought he was going to come to TC3 to play basketball, changed his mind, didn't want to play basketball. But he got very involved on campus, became an ambassador, did very well academically, became one of our mentors, and so on and so forth, graduated with honors, attended Cornell, won all the prizes and recognitions over the Cornell Ag and Life Sciences School that they offered, one of the premier awards, and I can't tell you what the award is right now. Graduating Cornell with honors a year and a half ago, kind of got accepted at Columbia Law School, and today he's in second year Columbia Law School students. Okay, Iggy would, by all criteria, would not have been admitted. Okay, if you just look at his grades, but we're open access, so we give those students a chance, and you never know which one is really going to succeed and who isn't. And that's what we're all about as a community college. That's what we do. And some win, and some become Iggies, and some don't. But you never know which are the Iggies and which aren't.
Yeah, let me just respond a little bit to that. I mean, it's
well, Peter, we need to move on here.
No, I got
quickly.
All right, okay,
quickly.
Fine.
Quickly, Peter. Rich John.
Huh?
Rich John.
I had a comment and then a question. You kind of stole my thunder because I was just going to talk about I coach youth hockey, and I've coached for over a decade. In the last 4 years, I've coached the 15 to 18-year-olds, and I can't tell you how many of my players have gone on to TC3. And it's changed their lives. It's really just a great, great place. We are so lucky to have it. And it's hard to hear the dire financial numbers, and I hope you and your team can remind yourself when you take a breath just what a difference you're making. It's really important. My question is, I'm glad we were able to help with your roof, and I was wondering, you tell us, is that work done?
Help with what? I couldn't hear.
The roof.
The roof.
The roof.
No, the work is not done. We got started last fall. I think the critical parts on each end where we were really getting a lot of the leaks did get done before the weather changed. They have been working during the winter with some of the internal drainage kind of things that they had to redo. And I think that's mostly done. Now they're just waiting for the weather to break and they'll finish it up. So anyway, we're hoping that'll get wrapped up. I don't know how long. Whatever I say, I'll probably be wrong. But it all depends on weather. Maybe sometime in early midsummer it should be done. So.
Leslie.
Oh, dear. Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so very much. I know you'll be back at some point, but I do want to say thank you for your leadership. You've always been extremely responsive whenever I've called or anything. And I appreciate so very much, I have to point it out, looking at this annual report and seeing the diversity of people that are represented here more than ever than I've seen in any annual report that has come from TC3. So I really do appreciate that. 11%, 11+% down, I think just about every higher ed institution in the area are facing a decrease in enrollment. And so I want to suspect that at TC3, folks are really strategically looking and thinking and putting a big focus on how do we reverse that. Mm-hmm. Is there a group that probably even made up of some community members as well talking about how do we reverse that trend to get more people into the college? So is there anything like that happening? Any conversation around that?
Well, I think a lot of the initiatives that I pointed out during our, both not only the marketing thing, but all the other again, it's one thing to try to attract new students, but an awful lot of work is trying to retain them once we have them. And that's where a lot of the effort is focused right now. But, you know, I'm all ears. I'll go talk to anybody anytime, okay, with ideas about what we could be doing better to respond to community needs and so on. But I think we are and willing to do even more.
I will definitely reach out.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dooley?
Oh, thank you. Was this annual report of yours made available to the three candidates for president of IC?
I handed it to her on the way out when I left today. So, and I'll do the same with the other two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I would think that a chance to look at it ahead of time would have been fair for each one. I was amused. I very much appreciated being able to go and hear the first candidate. I guess it was yesterday. And was amused to hear her say that her 4 years of college, which took her 5 years, was a great experience. And the first year she spent learning how to transition from high school to college and all the social interactions took up all of her time, not anything academic. So that has to be something that is truest for the younger students who come. Do you mostly get older students now and not younger students?
Do I think the same is true for older students? Is that the question?
What she said would certainly be true for younger students, and I wondered whether you mostly get younger students or older students now. I wasn't clear from seeing any facts in this report. So.
Well, we have I'm not sure quite where to go. I hope I'm understanding the question correctly. But I think we do a lot in terms of people that are coming back that are adults, okay, wanting to return to college. Some who had college experiences otherwise maybe already have degrees, so they're very aware of the process and what they need to do and so on. Others, totally intimidated, never been to college, but now feel like, you know, they've got to get some kind of additional education in order to be employable or to improve their situation and so on. So we have a lot of support systems for those students, okay? And one of those is the Pathway Scholarship Program. We have 80 students, okay, involved in that program, again, with targeted support for those students. We have organizations on campus that work with adult students, okay, and support them with different support groups and things of that sort. So there's a whole range of outreach, I think, that really try to address the needs of adult students returning to college as well as the traditional, if you will, age students as well.
I didn't ask my question well at all.
I'll try once more.
16, 17, 18, 19. Those would be the younger age students mm-hmm. out of high school, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
How is that the minority that makes up your student body? Are most of your students older than that?
Oh, the percentage? Honestly, I don't know the answer to that offhand. Okay. I do know that... I don't know if I can make this leap of assumption, okay, but, you know, the part-time student for a period of time, the number of part-time students was kind of going down a little bit, and it's recently started to stabilize a bit. But I can't necessarily assume it used to be able, like I could say, if I was talking about a part-time student, I was talking about an adult student. And I'm not sure that's true anymore, because I think even the demographics of part-time students is changing. So, be honest with you, I can't really answer that question.
That's fine. Thank you.
Yep.
Let's take Carol, then Martha, and then see if we can kind of wrap up.
So I'll add my thanks to you for coming to us all these years. You've come over the years with such a wealth of new programs and new thinking, and you've had such successes. I hate to have you have to leave on this note, because it's not reflective of what you have added to our community. I have a couple of really important questions. Who's the cute kid in the yellow hat? Is that somebody you're going to get to go and enjoy? It's in the little booklet. It's in the little
which
one.
Page?
The one with you.
It's the one with you.
I forgot to mention the foundation insert here, didn't I? And I meant to draw attention to that, so thank you for giving me that opening. But anyway, this gives you a little bit of the background on the scholarships that our foundation provides, our boards from the foundation and the budgets and so on. That picture that you're referencing, when we had a celebration for announcing our child care center, of course we had the children there, and they had me reading a book in front of all the children. So what you don't see right now is that there's a little yellow hat there in the bottom, but they all had these hard hats on, and so all the children were sitting in front of me, and it was I wish I could remember the name of the book now, but it was a story about animals, so I was having a lot of fun, you know, and it was a storybook that I'd read to my own children at one time, so it's been around for a long time, I just can't remember the name of it, and so I was having a little fun, you know, we mentioned this animal, and we'd make a noise, and all that, can hear the name of the noise, and so this little girl was very high energy. She couldn't sit still. So she came right up, okay, in the middle of all this and wanted to help me read the book. So they caught a picture of that, and she was a sweetheart. So anyway, she helped me read the book and make all the animal sounds when I was making reading the book.
So if there's more you want to say about the book, the insert, you could do that. But I also, I was hoping she was going to be somebody you were going to get to go and enjoy reading to in the future and put the problems behind you. But my other question is, sort of regarding the issues with student enrollment. Can you say more about what you think might, have contributed
to the enrollment decline
and to the extent to which it's part of a statewide or national trend? Is it trends? Is it unique to our situation? Is it that we've had such successes that there's no way you could have sustained them?
We are unique. I mentioned that earlier that all of the community colleges, actually, if you look at the range of decline in terms of the community colleges in New York State, we're kind of in the middle. You know, we aren't experiencing the more severe decline. This spring, the range of enrollment decline just for the spring semester alone, I know from being at a recent meeting with our colleague presidents, was somewhere between 5 and 12%, and we were sort of right in the middle of that. So a lot of colleges are going through even worse situations than we are. Now, I hesitate to point out, that doesn't make our situation any easier. It's still painful, and the situation we're addressing right now in terms of our budget for next year is painful. It's very difficult. So other than the factors that I mentioned, the competitiveness of higher education, the combination of the improved economy, which impacts community colleges more so than any other sector, the media kind of messaging that puts a chilling effect, I think, on a lot of families that they're right on the bubble of whether they want to borrow some money to send their child to college or not, and maybe somebody in their family lost a job, so they're not about to take out a loan, so they're not going to do it. These other kinds of economic factors that affect them. It's the fact that state-operated campuses are taking, again, some of the students that 4 or 5 years ago had been coming to community colleges. Okay, so it's very competitive, and we're on the rung of the ladder. Okay, that feels the impact, and so I think we're going to have to work harder and harder, more and more creative, to even attempt to try to stay somewhat stable. And I think we've done that, but we've got to continue to be creative, and both in terms of our programming, in terms of what we do to support students, in terms of how we present ourselves, how we engage with our community. It's going to be hard work. Okay, and there isn't any magic. If there was any magic formula out there, I'd grab it in a minute. But there isn't. It's just a lot of factors, a lot of headwinds, a lot of brutal facts that are all congealing, and the impact is on community colleges much more so than any other sector, and we're just going to have to deal with it.
Thank you.
And thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Mostly my questions were already answered. I would just a comment, two comments. One is, as the recession hit, you saw several years of really big growth in enrollment. Are you kind of back to where you were before the recession, or is it below that?
Our enrollment?
Yeah.
It depends on what year you want to look at. We peaked right after that recession, that 4,000 FTEs that I mentioned. We're now around 3,600, something like that.
How many?
I honestly don't remember, Martha, what year that goes back to in terms of when we were at that level. But it's partly in the six or seven, 2006 or seven, because the year that we peaked, that year we had a 14% increase in enrollment. Okay.
Right.
I mean, it was unbelievable. So it wasn't too many years, maybe a couple, 3 years before that when we're probably where we're at right now.
Okay, because, I mean, it talks about the cycle of what the economy is doing as being a big part of it. But I think tuition is key also. Then the other thing, I just, you really kind of got my curiosity going. Can you do some animal noises for us?
Moving right along.
Thank you for everything.
Anna, can you just finish us up?
Please? Yeah, very hopefully direct question. I'm curious from what you were talking about, you know, it got me thinking how we can support you in certain ways, but I realized what direction my ideas go depend on the answer to this question, which is, what percentage of the enrolled students come from Cortland and Tompkins counties, mm-hmm. and what percentage come from outside those counties?
The of the students that come from Tompkins and Cortland, roughly two-thirds are coming from Tompkins and one-third from Cortland. I could be off a percentage or so on that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at the percentage of first-time, full-time students at the college, they come from the two counties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I could answer that exactly. I'm going to say probably, if you're looking at first-time, full-time students, that might be 40% or so.
Okay, that's super helpful.
I could be off on that a little bit, but maybe a lot. It all depends on how we factor in our concurrent enrollment students. You know, so I'm not including those. I'm just looking at the first-time, full-time core enrollment, fall, spring enrollment. And I'm talking myself into that 40% feeling better.
Okay.
40-45%.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Carl, we thank you so much.
Could I just...
Yes, you may.
10 seconds on this, but I pass out this one-pager, and it's our lobbying position for community college support this year. And what the $14.8 million is what's being referred to as a Hold Harmless initiative for our base aid. Basically, what the state is doing and what SUNY is saying is that, look, because all of our enrollments are down in the state budget, therefore they're spending a lot less money. So rather than taking that money away and doing something else with it, keep that money there so we have the same level of base aid for each of the community colleges next year that we would have had if we hadn't had the enrollment decline. So that's a very important part of our ask. Plus, the $14.2 million, the invest column on the bottom of the page, that's a special additional fund that would support student success initiatives like the ones that I've been talking about earlier in our strategic priorities. That will be distributed, I understand, based on a proportion of all of the enrollment of all of the community colleges, the SUNY community colleges. Our estimate, rough estimate, is that would provide another $300,000 for the college if we were to get that. So it's very important, particularly when we're looking at our $2 million deficit that we're trying to address for next year. So if you have meetings with, you know, Assemblywoman Lifton or Senator Seward or anybody else that's at the state legislative level, by all means, if you're inclined to write a letter, an email, telephone call, whatever, and want to support what we're doing and our need for state aid support this year, these are the two big asks. The child care, of course, support
is another one. Typically, that always does get restored, but we don't want to take it for granted, so that's another one to mention as well. And if you have any follow-up questions on that, by all means, give me a call. So, again, thank you so much for the time tonight. You've been very generous on your time and your questions, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, too. We'll take 10 minutes. Come back at quarter of. Okay, we're back in session. We'll start with the chair's report. Martha mentioned that there was a meeting with Senator O'Mara. This is after the one we had two or three weeks ago with Assemblywoman Lifton. There were several of you members at the meeting. We had with Senator O'Mara. We pressed a number of issues, thanks to our county administrator for having a nice list of those, particularly associated with the need for mandate relief, which continues to be what we have in order to reduce the burden of real property taxes. In different ways, Medicaid, of course, is always the big one, but also things from DA salaries to the increase in age for youthful offenders to the requirements for assigned counsel and the cost of those things. All of those things we talked about, and I think Senator O'Mara was open to listening to us, and we had a very cordial conversation with him. Anybody else that was there wants to mention anything about it, please feel free. That's what I wanted to mention. Hopefully we'll be meeting with Senator Seward. We've met, had a brief meeting with Senator Helming before up at the airport, and we hope to perhaps have a chance to talk with Congressman Reed. Any questions? I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. Let's go to reports. Start with our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I have a very brief report tonight, just a couple of updates. First of all, Martha, thank you for referencing the accomplishments presentation. I hope everybody has a chance to look at it. I think you've come to know our department heads and know that they're not a boastful lot. This is the one time every year they have a chance to shed some light on the important things that have happened in their departments over the past year. And it's only a handful of things that we highlight, but they're important. So I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. It's also on the webpage. So if you'd prefer to look at it through that more colorful means, it's available to you online as well. A couple of things that I've tried to keep you posted on over the past several months. The first is the law enforcement shared services study. All of you got the heads up email the other day that there is going to be a public input meeting on March 20th at 6:30 at the Space at Green Star. That's been formalized today, so when you get back to your computers tonight, you'll probably see something from Marsha. So a formal notice has gone out to all the media outlets. Hopefully it goes on listservs. We have a large room that will house 200 people. The session will go for a couple of hours. Modeled very much after the meeting that Rich had with the jail study committee. Quick introduction of what it is by the consultants, and then a lot of time for people to speak their mind about what's important to them and any concerns that they have, opportunities that they see, and so forth. So, again, that's March 20th at 6:30 at the Space. The other item that we've talked about is centralized arraignment. I think I told you last time that there was going to be a meeting of the magistrates. It was a Saturday ago. They all met at the jail for the annual jail tour. And we talked about centralized arraignment, kind of a mixed reaction from the magistrates. Some really like the idea that they're only going to have to worry about after-hours arraignments once every 18 weeks or 18 months. There are 18 judges, so they're on a rotation. And so they would handle either a week and then be off for 17 weeks or a month. And some saw a benefit in that, having some predictability in their lives. Others had some concerns about it, about burdens that might be put on them. We had a good discussion. Ken Lansing really stepped up at that meeting and explained the difficulties that law enforcement has as they try to find a judge at 3 o'clock in the morning to take the call to come into court to hear an arraignment, and then going down a list of judges. And instead of being on patrol, waiting for the arraignment process to work its course, and how this centralized approach could really shrink the time that they spend off the road and waiting for others to show up. And I thought he made a really compelling argument to the magistrates. There will be follow-up meetings involving stakeholders. That includes the magistrates, law enforcement, the DA, the assigned counsel program, state police. There'll be follow-ups. Ideally, there will be a consensus that emerges, either to do it or not. And at that point, if there is a consensus to go forward, a plan is presented to the state. The state reviews the plan and then either agrees to put it in place or not, and returns it with the suggestions. So it's moving forward. And again, the important thing is it's now been aired in front of at least most of the magistrates, those that came to their annual meeting a couple of Saturdays ago. So that's my report.
Questions? Will?
Sure. On this last item, you used the word consensus. That's sort of unusual in terms of public processes. Does this mean everybody essentially has to either agree to it or at least not vehemently disagree?
My definition of consensus is almost like a supermajority. The law doesn't require unanimity locally. In fact, the law gives the chief administrative judge the power to approve a plan, to put it in place, after getting input from the local stakeholders. So it really is silent on whether you need unanimity or not. I'm an optimist. I think by the end of the process, people will see the value in this and we'll find at least near unanimity on it.
Thank you.
Carol and Martha. Let's just take Carol first, then Martha.
On the shared services presentation or meeting, how are you going to publicize that? How?
Widely. Again, the reason I wanted you to get it early is for you to get on your listservs, talk to constituents. So that went out last week. Today, right before she came over here, Marcia hit send to get it out to the media outlets. And again, all the people that get the press releases and things that come out of our office. We've done the same thing with the city. We've asked the city to publicize it through their sources. So that's our goal. And if I still have the mic, can I? I know I said this last time, but I'd like to say it again. This isn't the be-all and end-all. There is a survey that will be going out within the next week or so, community-wide survey in electronic form and hard copy for people to take and provide input about things. There will be a couple of focus groups that will occur over the next month or two. And then when options begin to emerge from the study, there will be public input sessions. I think there are two or three, I actually think it's three public input sessions, to get the public's take on whatever options come out of this report. So there's a great deal of public engagement that we've built into this process.
Thank you.
I have Martha next, then Anna.
Two questions. Is the shared services project, are they looking at LEED at all? And is there any conversation about the third court, the DWI court, and that proposal? Or are we sort of trying to consolidate arraignment first?
I guess they're all on a separate track. So LEED right now is moving forward. There's another meeting scheduled for next week with the city and the county and some agencies to talk about next steps there. And I think I said last time, a couple of policy issues have to be addressed. One is when the law enforcement folks let go and turn that case over to the human service types. And the second is, I forget the second big issue that has to be handled. Anyway, there are two issues.
To hire staff.
That's it. Whether it needs a staff person to serve as a case manager, the go-to person on this. So those are the two policy issues that really need to be decided. But things are moving forward on LEED independent of the shared services study.
But is the possibility of really ramping up LEAD being considered in evaluating whether shared services, I mean, it's the more integrated the forces are, the better, it would seem. Is that any part of the discussion?
Candidly, no. It hasn't been woven into that discussion yet, but that's a good thought. Yeah.
Okay, and the DWI court?
We've waited to pursue that. We've probably lost the 2017 budget cycle for the state. We wanted to make sure that Ray Schlatter, who was the chair of the task force, is involved in that pitch. Ray's been occupied with some high-profile cases, so we've held off. I think with that now done, we'll start moving forward.
Thanks.
Anna?
You mentioned focus groups, so there'll be a series of focus groups and then 2 to 3 public input sessions. Are those focus groups invites or are those?
Yeah, they're invites. And I think I think I may have said at the last meeting, if you have suggestions in terms of individuals who might, the consultants may want to invite to those focus group meetings, send them forward. They're looking for community leaders, civic leaders, business leaders, people whose opinions may help kind of shape what comes out of those focus groups. So if you have names of individuals you think should be invited, send them to me and I'll forward them to the consultants.
And are they also, just like the jail study, are they meeting with target group community groups as well on top of those?
No, the public engagement here, because it's kind of a different issue, but the public engagement is as I've described it. They are spending a lot of time interviewing the agencies themselves to understand how they tick. You know, the rosters and how they pay people and how they schedule people and all that stuff. They're spending a lot of time in those interviews with the agencies. But in terms of public input, it's the ways I described. The big public meeting, open mic night, the focus groups, the surveys, and then take a breath toward the end of it when the options begin to come out of the study. 3 more public sessions to get input about the specific options that are coming out of the report.
So are they, if we put names forward or send you groups, then those groups could pick someone to be a representative of that group in those. Okay, so I'll send
that would
you
make
those.
Sense, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Questions? Martha?
Sorry. From the accomplishments, where are we on the hydropower, and like, are we going to get a tour? You said we could get a tour.
Yeah. Actually, they gave us an annual report a few weeks ago, which I'll pass around, which is a pretty nice report. So they started pretty much in October. December, there's been a lot of water going through. There's a lot of water, probably more than we thought would be going through. So things are going well. There's still some updates to the facility that they need to do in order for us to get the full credit that we want. So we have to work out some financial issues. We're getting credits, but we have to work out how we're going to handle until we get the full level of credit, which requires some additional hookups that we didn't necessarily know about to begin with. Other than that, it's going very well. We were planning to have something in the fall, in the spring. We'll have to figure out an exact date. There'll definitely be a time. I'm trying to time it when they're not digging up to do connection work, but we'll let you know soon as to when there will be a date, and it really is worth seeing. So it's going very well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Let's go to Rick Snyder, our finance director.
I'd just like to bring to you the sales tax report for January. It's on page 5 in your packet, and we can see if you go down on the sales tax distribution summary to line 6 and 7, you can see the county's portion of sales tax distributions for January was up 8.32% for the month of January. And course, we only have 1 month out of 12 at this point, so the year-to-date distribution is exactly the same, which totals $2,702,812 compared to $2,495,108 in 2016. And that's an increase for just that 1 month of $207,704, or once again 8.32% over the preceding year. And I might add, it's the best January on record. So I know Joe takes this very, very seriously when he's putting together next year's budget with 1 month under our belt. But it is a good start for this year.
Remember, it's the court of accounts.
Questions? We continue to keep our fingers crossed for the next 2 months. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Julie Kiefer.
I had placed in your packet a resolution that's not on the agenda, so it would need 10 votes to get added to the agenda. And I'd like to ask that that happened. The title of the resolution is Recognition of Leadership by Local Governments in Shared Services Initiatives and the Loss of State Aid over the Past 3 Decades. And I think there's supposed to be a hyphen between shared and services.
It's been seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion.
I also have one whereas that is highlighted in yellow because I wanted to check the information with our county administrator. And there are two corrections that should be made to that. In the second line, well, I'll read the end of the first line, represent the largest part of the county tax bill. It's not any tax bill. And the year is 2017, not 2016. And one reason that this was uncertain as to this language is that I had hoped that, not unlike our tax bills that I just paid with the county and town together, that show about 3/4 of what we pay is state mandate. Joe said that that's not really appropriate for this resolution where it's not as crystal clear, and he felt only comfortable referring to human services portion of our budget. Maybe you can say that better than I did.
I think in terms, if the goal of the county and every county is to be relieved of the burden of mandates, these are the core mandates that we talk about. These are the human service mandates. Medicaid is the giant one. It's the two temporary assistance programs, the assigned council, the pre-K program and the early intervention program. So when you look at the front of our budget, these are the ones that we call out, the human service mandates. There are lots of other mandates in our budget that we tally when we put the tax bill together that range from probation to pensions and things like that. I don't know that we would expect the state to take over our pensions as we would hope the state would take over our Medicaid burden. So when Dooley talked to me about this resolution, in terms of those things that we would look to the state when enlightenment occurs to take over, these are the kind of the hardcore human service mandates that really should be on the state's ledger rather than ours. So that's where the number comes from.
Julie, am I correct that the version you're presenting did not go through committee?
That's correct. It came up as a topic at the end of the most recent Government Operations Committee, but it hadn't been introduced there. We had all just received a copy of the Town of Caroline resolution that was referred to under privilege of the floor tonight, and that's what inspired me to try to move something. So there was no committee prepared to act on this, and doing it sooner rather than later, given that the state budget is being acted on this month, seemed highly desirable to me.
Jim?
Mike, I apologize for being late, but if anyone wants to know, I'll tell them why. But are we talking about this resolution? Is it permissible now to make comments on this up and down?
To everyone to understand what the genesis of the resolution was.
Usually,
resolutions come through committee.
I mean, I just want to say I'm not going to support this, and for a couple of reasons. One, I think that it's been done before, and I don't know that it would be.
Point of order. Sorry, Jim, before you launch in, since you were, I'm not sure, I didn't catch exactly when you walked in, but at this point, were we just debating
address
whether
point
to
of order to
put
me,
it
please.
On the agenda? We're just debating whether to put it on the agenda.
That's correct.
At this point, not
that's correct.
What it is. Is that where we stand?
Mm-hmm. So it's been moved to add it to the agenda, yes. And I moved
it
second.
If we put it on the agenda, then we would debate it later. Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Just wanted to. Sorry to interrupt.
Was there an election, a new chair, while I was away?
There was a proper point of order.
Okay.
She was looking at you instead of me, though. Jim, you can finish what you're saying.
I can't. I am not going to support putting it on the agenda. If it goes to another place after that, if it doesn't require or doesn't get the 10 votes, I'm just going to be one person who is not going to support putting it on the agenda tonight.
Do you want to proceed to a vote on whether to add it to the agenda? Sounds like we do. All those in favor of adding this resolution to the agenda, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Let me keep them up again. Let me make a count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The resolution is added to the agenda.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on. Let's do the consent agenda. We have some advisory board appointments. Out of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee to the Environmental Management Council, James Knighton and Vladimir Mikic. To the Soil and Water Conservation District, James Dennis and David McKenna. To the Water Resources Council, Dooley Kiefer. To the Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Carol Chalk.
Excuse me, Mike. That should be Mike Sigler, right? We discussed in committee, and it didn't get moved.
I'm sorry, which one?
Fish and Wildlife.
That should be Mike Sigler.
Did we resolve it, or did we? Yeah? Okay.
We're all okay with that?
Yeah, Mike Sigler.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
To the Energy Task Force. A number of people, Sharon Anderson, Martha Armstrong, Clifford Babson, Dan Kogan, Fernando de Aragon, Jerry Dietz, Brian Eden, Todd Fox, Nick Goldsmith, Kurt Gooch, Jerry Goodnow, Robert Howarth, Tim Mount, Sarah Kelson, Megan Pulver, Bryce Smith, Jennifer Tavares, Irene Weiser, Gordon Woodcock, Sarah Zemanek, and Martha Robertson as a liaison.
You mentioned it. You read it.
Nobody.
It's in your
packet. Oh, I'm sorry.
Is there a question? All right. And let's take the resolutions. If you don't want them on, please just say off.
Point of order?
Yes.
Are there some further advisory board applications for the temporary assessment panels?
Did I miss some? Michelle says it's part of B, Resolution B.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
So let's take Resolution A, authorization to accept a grant from the New York State Department of State Municipal Restructuring Fund to undertake a shared services fast-track project out of the county clerk's office. That's ID 6887. Resolution B, appointment of temporary hearing panels assessment. That's ID 6820. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? They're all at it. You've done it. Let's go to standing committees. The old library committee has not met. We do, I think, have a date to do that later in March. Questions?
You said you had a date?
Yeah, there's a date. Do you know the date? 29th at what time? We'll get it. It's the 29th of March.
3:30.
At 3:30, Martha says. Public Safety Committee, Rich John is the chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. The Public Safety Committee has not met since our last legislative meeting. We're scheduled to meet next a week from Thursday, the 16th. And with the chair's indulgence, could I give the Jail Study Committee same report, which is essentially we'll be meeting on the 16th.
Without objection.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it, unless there's questions.
Questions for either committee? Well, you got out of that one good, didn't you? Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis is our chair.
We also have not met since our last meeting. We are meeting on March 20th as our next meeting, and that is the end of my report.
Questions for Anna?
By the way, annually our meeting meets at 4:30, not 3:30, typically.
Let's go to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F&I has not met since our last meeting. We'll be meeting in East Chambers at 3:30 on the 14th, next Tuesday. That's my report.
Questions for David? Transportation Committee. We have had a meeting. We had a very interesting presentation from Dwight Mengel, and as was referred to us by the Health and Human Services Committee. Thank you, Anna.
Absolutely.
It has to do with mobility as a service, which basically is a concept that's being looked at in certainly some Scandinavian countries and probably a little larger cities than we have here in as far as Ithaca is concerned. But where people subscribe to a service where they can have automobile time or bicycle time or, I don't know, they can do trains and buses over there. So it was quite interesting, and I think it was something that gave us an opportunity to think outside the box a little bit for Tompkins County. We're also going to be planning a field trip to the DOT in Syracuse to talk with state DOT representatives about our state highways. Questions? Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have kind of a longish report tonight. We met on March 1st. We had a really packed meeting with a lot of interesting things. We received the 2017 Annual Equity Maintenance Program report from Jay Franklin, our assessment director. I highly recommend reading this report. It's 12 pages. It's a snapshot of the county viewed through the lens of housing and real estate and assessment, and you'll learn a lot. And I'm going to tell you a few little things about it. And I'm also going to tell you to write your questions down because Jay is out of town. He's at a conference, and I'm not going to be able to answer your questions very well. I can try, but... So one thing Jay told us is that he is aware of approximately 3,000 housing units that are currently in the planning stages for Tompkins County. Various states of planning, not all of them will end up getting built, but he's aware of that many. And that doesn't even count Chain Works or the Tree Block Building or Harold Square or anything on the Cornell campus. So, you know, we know this. There's a lot of activity going on. I didn't know there was that much activity, at least in the planning stages. Assessment Department reassessed approximately 5,000 properties in Tompkins County this year. About 10% of those received a decrease of assessment and 90% received some kind of increase of assessment. I'm going to read the list of the areas of major reassessment this year because those are the phone calls you're going to get if you're in these places. So the residential reassessments were done in the town of Caroline, the village of Freeville, town of Enfield, in the town of Ithaca, South Hill and East Hill, lake properties, and multiple subdivisions in the towns of Dryden, Lansing, and Groton. As far as commercial properties, and these are countywide, the reassessments that were done this year were for food establishments and restaurants, mini storage, warehouses, cold storage, manufacturing, cell towers, auto repair, and commercial land. So the residential properties that were reassessed are going to be receiving a letter this week letting them know about their reassessment, and that's when you'll probably start getting your phone calls. One of the things that you can tell them right away is that there are multiple opportunities for people to challenge their assessment if that's what they want to do. There's a whole bunch of different ways that they can do it, and that they have about 3 months to do it, so nothing's going to happen tomorrow. They have a lot of time to understand the process and to learn ways that they can challenge their assessment if they want to.
You want to read that list again of where they're going to be looking?
Sure. The residential ones, town of Caroline, village of Freeville, town of Enfield, town of Ithaca, South Hill and East Hill, lake properties, and then multiple subdivisions in the towns of Dryden, Lansing, and Groton. There's also commercial ones that I won't read that one again. Another assessment item that we will be paying attention to is that currently the data systems that the county clerk's office uses and the assessment department uses are incompatible. And assessment needs that information to update, you know, their data. So currently they're doing it manually. There's a person that does this, and it takes a lot of staff time. So we got a promise from our assessment director, from county clerk, and from our IT director that they're going to meet and take a look at this situation and see if there's some solutions they can come up with to address that issue. And then an additional assessment-related item that we talked about is a possible infrastructure exemption. I mentioned this last time. It would allow for a 3-year exemption in the increase in assessment due to the installation of certain infrastructure in subdivisions and other kinds of developments. So this exemption could make it slightly easier to build houses in Tompkins County. However, the question was raised is that this sort of broad brush approach, the one we want to use, because it could have the effect of encouraging sprawl. So what we said is that we're going to continue to look at this and other exemptions that are available that could be used to focus the kind of development that we want to see that's outlined in our county's master plan, in the comprehensive plan. So that's to be continued. We didn't reach any decisions on that yet. Okay, a couple more things. We got preliminary information about the possible outcomes of 2 foreclosed properties that were pulled from auction last year. One of them is in the town of Ulysses. It's a wooded parcel, and it borders the Black Diamond Trail. And another is a parcel that has some frontage on Fall Creek in the village of Freeville. And in both of these cases, the local municipalities are interested in purchasing those properties and taking them over, which is a desired outcome. This is why we pull them from the auction, so that the local municipalities have a need that they see that's going to benefit them. And so those are in process, and you will hear more about that in the coming months if those go through. And then the last item was about a discussion about public Wi-Fi access in county buildings. I also mentioned this previously. So it turns out this is a more complicated topic than it appears right on the surface. There are a whole bunch of questions that would need to get answered before we can even look at what the technical solution would be or what the cost estimate would be for implementing these. So what I'm going to do is form a subcommittee to meet a couple of times and answer these questions and come up with a recommendation to the Government Operations Committee about how to implement public Wi-Fi access in the county buildings. If there's anybody that's not on the Government Operations Committee that is particularly interested in this topic and would like to be on that subcommittee, then notify me soon. If you're on GO, then I'll be notifying you, and we'll be setting up Google a doodle poll and getting that going. And that's my report.
Questions for Dan? Martha?
Just a comment on the infrastructure exemption.
Yeah.
The town of Ithaca is moving forward with it, and I talked about it with Supervisor Bill Goodman. It's obviously different for them because they do have land use control, and they can kind of direct it in particular locations. So if sprawl is a question, then they have control over that. Unfortunately, also, the real benefit would be if school districts would support it, and they haven't been really keen on those kinds of exemptions lately. But it's important to look at, and I'm glad the committee looked at it. And we'll continue to talk about it. Thanks.
Dan, I know that the issue of census coming up in 2020 is important, and we heard about the LUCA process at the NYSAC, and I just heard this week that Greg Potter has agreed to lead the effort on that. Greg's here tonight. I assume that's going to be reporting to your committee. And with the news about 3,000 units out there that are at least being contemplated, this process is about, as I understand it, making sure that we count every unit, every residential unit, so that they get the census questionnaires during the census process when they are sent out to the feds. Oh, Greg, do you want to say anything about it? Greg Potter, Director of Information Technology. You sit right in the front.
That's right. Yeah, this is, as Mike had mentioned, this is a really critical first step towards the census count that we're facing in the next couple of years. And so this year or this decade for the LUCA project is much different than the past because they're only relying on the submittal of information by local governments to make that decision on the address information. In the past, they've set out and hired field staff to do some of the work in conjunction with the local municipalities. That will not be happening this time around. So it's really critical that we provide the right information through the local process. In the past, we've done that in a coordinated effort where the county took the lead and worked with the local municipalities to review and collect the information and submit it on their behalf. And most of the municipalities were very thankful and grateful for the county taking the lead on that effort. So I would propose that we would do the same thing this year, and I would respond to and provide the guidance for that effort and work with Dan at GO to update them on the status of that.
Thank you, Greg. Anything else, Dan?
No, not for me.
Carol?
Yeah, I just want to second what Dan said about the importance for other legislators who aren't on the committee of taking the time to look at this report. I mean, this is the report where Jay talks about, what he lists each town or each district within the county, each neighborhood, and reflects on what did he see, what did he and his staff find in terms of the trends in assessed values, for your town and your town relative to the others. So it's super important in terms of where people might see their property values having gone and going in the future, maybe. And then in addition, the sort of these overall areas, types of properties. So it's very basic to what we do and important to look at. And you did a great job, Dan. And our assessment staff, it's just, one thing you're struck with every year is what a professional job they do. Sorry Jay's not here to hear this, but, it's clear that we have a very special staff here and approach in our department, and we're lucky to have them.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on. to the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We met on March 2nd last week, and our next meeting will be April. April 6th, Thursday, April 6th. There are a number of resolutions that will be on the agenda for next time, so I won't go through those issues. We did have one item I'll mention. Julia Maddock came to talk about the there's a workforce investment board resolution you'll get next time. But I asked her about the budget, the federal budget, because their funding is federal, like all federal, right? Joe is nodding. And she didn't, as of last week, didn't know specifically what would be in to the president's proposal or Congress. But she said the Heritage Fund is kind of their guidance. It was the GOP budget is being modeled on the Heritage Foundation's budget. And in that document, the Workforce Opportunity Act is zeroed out. No money for workforce training from a president who was all about jobs. So just stay tuned. A couple of things on Commissioner on Marx's report that they have, if you remember the energy focus area update that they've been working on for quite some time. The draft report is now finished and their staff is responding, so we should get that. That should be done by the end of the month, so that'll be coming maybe by the next PDEC meeting. The conversations with the Park Foundation are continuing about the Energy Navigator, and they want a little bit more information, so they've kind of resubmitted that proposal with that information. NYSERDA is funding case studies on electric buildings, on buildings that are heated with heat pumps and electricity. And so there's some case studies being developed right now. And actually, I think Tatum and Cooperative Exchange, a couple of people locally, are working on case studies that we can start to shop around. And especially that'll be helpful to work with folks in Lansing, which I'm certainly committed to doing. The okay, and then for something in your packet, it's item 6871, a conflict of interest disclosure. There's no vote for us, but I'm going to mention it. It was that item B?
Page 9.
Okay, right, page 9. Conflict of interest disclosure for relative of an Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council employee seeking to participate in the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program. We had a similar thing a couple meetings ago. This is actually the adult child of one of our employees who is eligible for our home ownership program. And this has gone through the review, and I'm just stating it now, and it's in your packet so that it's publicly noticed that that this conflict has been identified and or potential conflict has been identified and it's believed that the person is eligible for the program. I think that's about it.
Questions? Okay, thank you, Martha.
Thank you.
Call your attention to an information item in the packet regarding the conflict of interest disclosure for a relative of an Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council employee who's seeking to participate in the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program. We had one of these previously, and it's a matter of disclosing it, and it'll have to go for a waiver to the oversight at the state, I believe it is, to be approved. Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you. We have a meeting Monday afternoon at 4 p.m., and that concludes my report.
Questions for Jim?
Yeah.
Julie?
What's on the agenda? Anything interesting?
I'm sorry?
What's on the agenda?
I don't have it in front of me. It's online. I mean,
I thought maybe
you really want me to read what's on the agenda? Hold on.
I thought
on.
Maybe there was something particularly interesting.
Well, they're all interesting. Trust me. Let me see. Starting out, minutes approval, comments from the public, chair report, director finance report, county administrator report, a report from HRC, workforce WDIC, public information officer. Resolutions. A, adjustments to the 2017 budget, municipal sales tax distribution agreement. B, appropriation from the contingent fund infrastructure study in the town of Dryden. B, C, budget adjustment to transfer from highway fund balance and amend the capital project cost, increasing the project cost, reconstruction of Forest Home Drive, and on and on.
I'd like to call the question, please.
Thank you, Jim.
I think it's available online.
Julie, you done?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions for Jim? Thank you, Jim. Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean-Claiborne is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to defer to Anna Kellis, vice chair of this committee, for the report, as I was not present for the last meeting. But I do want to take this opportunity very quickly to say, as more and more issues are being brought up around immigration and safety and actions that are clearly discriminatory and oppressive, more and more the work of WDIC is proving to be extremely important. And I'm hoping that, again, my mantra, as a county, we really do be a shining example of how important it is to honor and respect our not differences, but our similarities, as well as being progressive in the actions we take to make sure that people are safe and protected. Thank you.
There were three big things that we discussed in the meeting. The first was an introduction of Michelle Rios Dominguez, the manager of Talent Acquisition and Engagement in Human Resources Department. I want to welcome her again. She has come here to meet with all of us. She is her previous position was at IC in a similar role. She's exceptionally dynamic, passionate about what she's doing. I think we're really lucky to have her. And she talked to us about the fact that diversity and increasing diversity is not a matter of simply having more interviews, but retention as well, which requires a shift in culture, an expanding of culture, and an awareness of concepts like structural racism, which are much more subtle. When we think about racism, we always think about, you know, name-calling and bullying and rejection of people who seem like other. And much more subtle concepts of racism being more hidden or subtle opportunities available, or comfort level, or vocabulary, or attentiveness to differences. And there's tremendous opportunity in our community, in our county community, to expand our awareness of that. So I am extremely excited for her to be here. I hope that everybody meets with her. I hope she continues to do the training within her current department, but she intends to do training with all of our departments, and hopefully at some point maybe she could come speak to the legislature, and I think it would be a great idea to do a training among us so that we can see what she's doing for our county. So that was the first. The second was about a month or two ago, we were talking about the civil service exam and whether or not there was actual diversity in those that apply for the civil service exam. And it was brought to our attention that there's a big difference between those that apply to take the civil service exam and those that actually show up to take it. We are one of very few counties that charge a fee for taking this, which is that not the case? I thought it was.
We're one of the few that don't charge a fee.
We're one of very few that do not charge, which we are very proud of, but it does have its own challenges. And so we wanted to see what the diversity was in those that apply and then the diversity of those that follow through. And so she reviewed some of those. It's the first time that they've taken those, they've collected that data. So we've asked them to collect it continuously, find a standard protocol for gathering the information, and we're going to start to look at trends over time because that's really important for the pipeline into county positions. And there were some opportunities for growth in that because there were some subgroups where there was a big difference between application and the exam taking. So we'll come back with that information. The last one was that 2018 will be the second round of the climate survey. And I'm just now beginning to understand the tremendous importance of it. People have asked me before if we've gotten, we haven't heard that much from the first one yet. But one of the things that was brought to my attention is that it's really the trends that we're looking at here. And so this will be the opportunity to collect a second round, and then we can really look to see if any of the engagements or interventions that we're doing are having an effect, having an impact. And then we can be more targeted and focused in any interventions that we're doing. So we talked about the committees that we're going to be forming. We need an education and outreach committee, and we need an evaluation committee. If anyone here is interested in serving in those committees so that we can evaluate the questions that were asked previously and what we want to see moving forward, I really encourage you to reach out to Leslin because I think it's a really important initiative. And, I wanted to say one shout-out to Leslin. Over the last month, our last year, I've really seen how important this particular committee is, and your direction here is very important. So I wanted to thank you. That's my report. The next meeting is on March 22nd at 3:30 in the old jail conference room.
Thank you. It's nice to have Leslie's full voice back again, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there questions for Anna or Leslie? Okay, let's go to individual member filed resolutions. We have added one to the agenda. I believe it's in your red packet. Dooley Kiefer, do you want to move it?
Yes, I'd like to move it. It's entitled Recognition of Leadership by Local Governments in Shared Services Initiatives and the Loss of State Aid Over the Past Three Decades. It's ID 6903. I move it.
I have a second by Anna. Julie, you want to speak to it?
I think that I was inspired by the town of Caroline recognizing how our state governor keeps putting the blame on our counties for not reducing taxes, spending money inappropriately somehow, although he never details what we're doing that's not right. There's no data supporting that. And our problem is really with unfunded state mandates. So this resolution addresses initially the governor's reference to there being at least 10,000 local governments and that's what's got to be winnowed away, and explains that they're not 10,000 or so local governments. There are taxing districts for sewer, water, neighborhood lights, things like that, and many of them are actually required by state law so that one is not charged for an amenity that one doesn't receive himself. So the resolution makes that clear, and then makes clear what we would like in the way of redress. Thanks.
Wells will speak to it. Jim?
I'm going to move this resolution to the Budget and Capital Committee to be looked at on Monday.
So you have a motion to refer to committee.
Right.
Is there a second for that? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion on the motion to refer to committee. Carol?
Well, first, I would hope that we could talk about it here first and get a sense of the body. Motion, but I'd like to move to... So I don't think that we ought to do that yet. If we're going to do it, I think there ought to be some discussion. So we'll vote against it at this point. After some discussion, it's possible I'd move it to a committee, but I'd like to move to amend that to the Government Operations Committee.
Motion to amend the referral to the Government Operations Committee. Is there a second? Our parliamentarian is telling us we can't amend that. Okay.
Why not? Oh.
Because it's under the rules, you can't amend a motion to refer to committee.
Can't amend a motion to refer to committee. Okay, well then.
Jonathan, you need to use your microphone.
Sure. Yeah, if there's a motion to refer to committee, and in the rules of the legislature, there's a list of motions which you can't move to amend, and one of them is a motion to refer to committee.
If it should fail, you could bring a new motion to do it on another committee.
Well, I have an interest in seeing us talk about it here first and see if there's a sense of the body. Maybe we don't need to bother the committee. Maybe we can just deal with it now. But I would certainly argue that that if we're going to refer it to committee, that it would be that, you know, this has to do with various points of government operations. And, yes, it impacts our budget, but that right place to send it would be there. In terms of whether to send it to committee at all, at this point, I'll hold.
Dooley Kiefer on the motion to return
right
to committee.
I will speak against referring it to a committee. The whole point of bringing this tonight is to get it acted on sooner rather than later. The state budget is under discussion. If this gets put off to a committee and then comes back, assuming it comes out of committee, if it comes back to the legislature, it will really be too late to have any effect. Were this to pass here tonight and it gets sent to all other counties outside of New York City, there may be a groundswell of other counties passing this, and the whole point is to do that sooner rather than later.
I think I have Mike Sigler next.
I guess we're all talking on this. I agree with everything in this. The problem I'm having, I guess, is it doesn't. I don't know how many more times we want to poke this bear kind of idea. You know, the governor is in office. I think if he runs again, I mean, I hope he doesn't win, but I think he's going to.
Point of order.
Why?
I believe that this is not. The motion on the floor was whether or not to refer to the committee. I don't think it's about the motion itself. Okay.
I think a point is well taken. Can you focus, Mike, and then we'll come back?
Okay. I have nothing else to say then. That's fine.
All right. Who's next? Anna?
I think Dan was next.
Dan.
Dooley said what I was going to say. Thanks.
Anna?
I'll just add to what Dooley said, which is that if we're going to get a groundswell, we need enough time to do it. It's all about time right now. And I think that the whole point of ever doing these types of things is not because we want to thumb our nose at or poke the bear per se, but because we want to get that groundswell. And if there are enough counties that are doing this, then we've really made a difference. We're not really going to make a difference by ourselves. And if we do it at the last second, then it misses the entire point. So.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I take it back. I was wrong. You can amend a motion to refer to a standing committee.
Well,
all right, then we'll take the amendment. Carol?
Is Anna, were you done? You can come back to Anna if I think.
No, I'm done.
Okay. I'd like to amend Jim's motion so that it would go to government operations if it were to be referred to committee.
Is there a second for that?
No.
Seconded by Peter. Okay, on the amendment to the motion to refer to committee. And if we are ready to vote on this, if we vote on this, then the motion becomes to refer it to the Government Operations Committee rather than to the Budget Committee. Let's, all those in favor of Carol's amendment, please raise your
hand. A question. So this is not voting on the motion itself. It's
no,
just on amending it.
It's amending.
Which committee it would go to should people then
passes,
vote.
Then there's still the motion to refer it to Government Operations. If it doesn't pass, there's still the motion to refer it to Budget.
Thank you.
Will?
Who's being? Trying to use my light as a microphone. Logically, both committees would be appropriate. What people may not know is it was brought to the Government Operations Committee at the very tail end, and basically out of deference to our wonderful secretary, who really was not in a position to actually help us shepherd our secretary, our legislative clerk. We decided not to press forward and have a special meeting, I will vote for this amendment. I think it's certainly appropriate, but ultimately I will be voting to deal with it tonight because the timing issue, I think, is critical.
Dan?
I prefer to vote on this tonight. However, if it's going to be sent to committee, it should be sent to Budget for timing. GO doesn't meet till April 5th. The New York State budget will be done by then. So it would become
moot.
Meaningless.
We could have a special meeting.
We have a special meeting.
Carol?
Well, you chair the committee, Dan, so you carry a lot of weight, but this did come up at the end of the meeting. We could have chosen to stay longer to deal with it then, and I think there were a bunch of us who needed to get to other places, and we talked about having a meeting before this meeting, and it was our clerk of the legislature who said, I'm going on vacation and I would really prefer that there's not a lot of time to set up another meeting. At that point, we didn't know if Michelle was coming back. Jim, can I ask you, you've already gone on record as being totally opposed to this. Is that correct?
No, it's not. I was stopped by
all
you
right.
when I was
Wait
talking.
Wait a minute. We
don't
need
really
to talk
know.
About
okay.
You don't really know where I was going.
I thought we talked about it, and it was
we
clear.
We need to stick to the question which is in front of us, which is your amendment, Carol, to refer this not to Budget Committee but to Government Operations Committee. Let's proceed to a vote. All those in favor of Carol's amendment to make the motion to refer to Government Operations Committee, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. I don't know where the rest of you are. Let's see the noes again. 1, 2, 3.
Wait, what are we voting on?
We're voting on Carol's amendment to have it go to Government Operations rather than to Budget.
Right. Okay.
Let's see the ayes again. We got to get 14 here. No, there is only 13. I'm sorry. We've left risk. Never mind. Okay. It's 10-3. All right, so now the motion in front of us is whether to refer this to the Government Operations Committee. The Budget Committee is out of the picture. All those in favor of referring it to the Government Operations Committee, please raise your hand.
Point of order.
No.
Can we?
No, we're in the...
We can't? Okay. What happened? Is it possible to delay this vote after some discussion? Or we?
No.
Rather than calling the question on it right away? No?
No, that's what takes precedence at this point. So let's talk about all those in favor of referring the resolution to the Government Operations Committee. Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-6-7. So that does not pass. So we are back to the main motion, which is the resolution. Further discussion on the resolution. Let's start. Mike?
So. The governor is in office now. Listen, again, I don't disagree with anything that is being said in this resolution. I don't think the governor particularly cares. I think the governor, if he could wipe out every county legislature in the state and make everything being run by the state government, I think that's what he would do. The dilemma we face is that he's the governor now. I don't foresee, you know, Ms. Teachout rising up and taking over the office of the governorship. And I just think that maybe it's time that instead of us kind of going after him, maybe it is actually time to build a bridge with the governor as opposed to trying to burn that bridge. We're good at burning the bridge. And this resolution is well written, and it states a lot of the things I believe in. And yet it doesn't seem like it gets us anywhere. Whereas I think, I don't know if we could build a bridge. I don't know if I'm the person to do that. I would like the $15 million, or not even more than 15. I would like the $30 million for the airport to have better consideration. I would like, you know, some things. I would like the governor to listen to us when we say, you know what, that takeover that you did of early intervention payments wasn't great. And here's what we think you can do to fix it. And I don't know. I think maybe it's time for a carrot instead of a stick. Not that we have a giant stick anyway. But I'm thinking maybe that's what we should do. But anyway, that's it.
I think we have Jim next.
Thank you. Mike said something in his first statement that he thinks the governor doesn't care about what we do or say, and I disagree with that. I think this governor does care about what people say, and he is a person who does not forget. I think there are some of us around the table who have heard stories rather recently about groups that Democratic groups who said and did things, and the governor's office quickly called and said, you know, why did that happen? And that's not something that we agree with here on the second floor. So that in itself, and I also think, you know, we have some irons in the fire. We have a grant application in at the state level for the airport. We are now a major force in air service in this area. All the jets are coming here. They're not going to Elmira. And it would be very helpful if that money came to this place. And you want to stick your finger in somebody's eye? I think we've done that many times here in the county legislature for this governor. And I think we should forego it this time. And what is most troubling is the words when you condemn the governor of New York State, or any governor, you condemn people. Our capital punishment doesn't exist in New York State. But when you condemn people, you're usually condemning them to something pretty horrible, death or whatever. And I that word is not a good word. If this resolution went forward, I would ask, if there's a majority of people who support it, I would ask that it be changed to strongly disagree or something. But I'm hoping that it doesn't go forward from here.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, I just want to respond to what Mike said before. I agree with everything you say, but nonetheless, I'm going to vote
the
other way.
I want the minutes to note that, please.
Everything that you said, I'm not sorry. Not everything that you say. Everything that you said, I agree. But I can think of another person in the political organization about whom I can say the same thing, which is the President of the United States. He cares what we say. It makes him very angry when we say something that he disagrees with. Does that mean you're going to stop talking about him? Because the terror that if he disagrees with you, he's going to hurt you and he's not going to give money to... I don't think so. I think in that request, in that way, we're going to, in that particular instance, we're going to continue to make very nasty comments about someone with whom we disagree strongly. Now, my disagreement with the governor is much smaller than my disagreement with the president, but nonetheless, it's large enough that I think that as independent individuals to whom who the governor is supposed to listen to, I think it is you should not be afraid of what he's going to do. We may lose something, okay? But every time you say that he's always going to be stronger than you, he's always going to have the ability to hurt you, and therefore, if you say you're never going to disagree with him publicly on something that you believe very strongly, then I think you're not carrying out the function that you're supposed to do.
I'd like to say that I certainly agree with Jim Dennis. I don't agree with you, Peter. I think how you say it means more than what you say sometimes. I think the for us to put forth a resolution asking for changes in the state mandate program, for example, makes a lot of sense. For us to put forth a resolution that would say that we disagree with the governor on his points that there are 10,000 municipalities and that it's the local governments that are causing the problems. But to use the language about condemning the governor because he has a different position from us, I don't think is the standard that we usually use when we have these kinds of resolutions of expressing our opinion. And that's why I will vote against it. Martha?
I'm going to vote against it, too, and I'm hoping that the 10 people who voted to put it on the agenda were just voting so that we would have a discussion. I do agree with all these things. I've said them here. I've said them before, and, in fact, I have a photo on my desk from 2010 when Andrew Cuomo was running for governor. Remember the Women's Community Building? There was a gathering there. I think it was the last time he was in Ithaca, almost the last time. And I'm standing there like, and everybody else is talking about fracking, and I'm standing there like this, shaking my, and Carol, you're right behind me in the photo, shaking my finger at the governor, no, at the candidate, saying, how can you rail about property taxes? You know it's the unfunded mandates. That was 2010. Now, it matters, so I don't mind being in somebody's face, I think you could tell, in somebody's face if I disagree with them. There's always a cost. So is it worth the cost? Okay. If we had done something like this in January and then had time, let's say, to take it to NYSAC, to build support, to really get other counties to do something, I agree with Mike about the language. It's we can disagree without being this offensive. But if we had had time, and rather, in fact, if we had were directing this to the legislative leaders, however many we got, 10 of them or whatever, all these different, if we were directing to the legislative leaders and said, all of us know that it's unfunded mandates, so Senate and Assembly and IDC leaders, we would really like you to stand up to the governor because we know you've already come out and said you disagree with unfunded mandates. We will support you if you stand up to the governor, et cetera. There are ways to do this. This is the wrong way to do it. It's the wrong time. It's too late. It will only cost us and not get us anything. There is zero chance this is going to help. It will only make us a target. There's no time to get some kind of rally of other counties. You know, just because Caroline did it, that's fine. And, you know, it's not what this is about. This is what it was inspired by Caroline's resolution. And that's fine. I understand. But it's too late. And it's actually directed in the wrong place. And you know, we've been saying the same thing over and over again, and I go to NYSAC every year and try to push them to be tougher. But this is only going to hurt us and not have any chance of succeeding in any way.
Carol?
So, first of all, I strongly support doing this. Well, not strongly, but I certainly support doing this. I think we have complained here over and over and over and over again about the way in which these costs keep getting sent down to the state at unfunded mandates. Enough is enough. And, you know, if your response to having more costs pushed down onto you is saying, oh, let's not make waves because, you know, he might keep doing it, the alternative has not worked to date. So I think it is time to try something new. And I think, you know, he has just been, you know, announcing these new ways in which he's going to continue to put the screws to local government. And there is time at this point to send this off to other counties. And if there's enough of us who stand up and say this is enough is enough, maybe we'll get somewhere. Of course, no, you don't get somewhere if it's one county or one town, but a united voice does. So that's first. In terms of my impression of that meeting that you're referring to, Martha, was the very first sentence that the governor said when the candidate said as he came to town, he told the story as a way of warming up the audience. He had come in a motorhome, I think, which was his, you know, campaign vehicle, and he'd come with his at least one daughter, if not both. And he told the story about how as he was driving down the hill into Ithaca, here's what he told his daughter right at the front of the bus was, we're heading into Ithaca, or Tompkins County, I forget how he puts it. This is someplace different than anywhere else in the entire state. And don't pay attention to what you hear here. It was essentially the message that what you're going to hear here is different than you're going to hear anywhere. I don't think that's true. I think we're sometimes willing to step up and say things first. But we've seen many examples over the years where what we've said has resonated around the state, and we've made a big difference. And I think this is whenever it was our administrator we brought to Albany, the year they wouldn't see any of us to say here's how these unfunded mandates impact us. So I think it's time. And third, Jim, I do hear what you say, and which is why when you pointed out, was it yesterday? You know, the negative language that Mike pointed out as well. I actually went home and did some homework, and I have some ways that I maybe would be friendly to the mover and the seconder that I've come to maybe tone down the language, although we, I believe in the essence. And so can I go through these and see if they're friendly or not? And maybe
propose amendments?
I'm going to propose amendments, yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, so, and I'm not going to take them in order in the document. I'm going to take them in order of what I think are important in the strength of the language. So in the second whereas, it says, whereas the governor provides no data whatsoever to support his, I think that's very strong. And if he can point to one piece of data that might support it, it sort of nixes the whole thing. So I would suggest changing that to whereas the data do not support the governor's, and we pick up with contention.
Is that a friend?
Whereas the data do not support the governor's contention.
Is that a friendly amendment? Julie?
That was Peter's language, and I will defer to Peter. He thinks it's...
You're the mover. You've got.
I understand. I wanted to consult with my colleague to my left.
Yeah, it's okay with me.
All right, then that's okay.
Acceptable. All right with Anna.
Okay. And then...
That's a friendly amendment.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The second was in the first... what's currently the first resolved... The one that Jim pointed out that says right now it says resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature strongly condemns and it goes on, Governor Andrew Cuomo's characterization, and I went to a thesaurus and looked at a lot of possibilities, and I, after, you know, there's a lot of strong language, but I would say it's simple enough to say that the resolve that the Tompkins County Legislature disagrees with Governor Andrew Cuomo's characterization, rather than strongly condemns, it would be disagrees with.
Is that friendly?
Friendly.
Julie?
If you say strongly disagrees with, that would be acceptable.
Fine. That would be okay with me. Strongly disagrees with?
That's friendly. So that's
added. Okay. Okay, then back to the first page, at the very first line, where is Andrew Cuomo, governor of the state of New York, and we have the wording, has railed against the existence of, and I just think it's classier to say, has characterized New York State as having more than 10,000 government entities. Again, it's the language with which we say it. So it would read, whereas Andrew Cuomo, governor of the state of New York, has characterized New York State as having more than, and we would take out, railed against the existence of.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Not yet. I want to hear the rest of them.
But I have one more that's a bigger deal. That's the only sort of wording change, and I have one other.
That's not friendly.
No, I have one more, but it's a bigger, that's a more content oriented.
Take your last one first, and then we'll come back to that one. Try to save some time.
While you think about that one, my other one was whether to just take that first resolved on the second page, the first resolved, and just turn it into a whereas. I think that one's a bigger choice, but. So instead of being resolved that we're strongly disagreeing with the government, it's whereas we strongly disagree with them, we then what we're resolving is calling on the New York State Legislature to enact meaningful mandate relief, which is just what Martha was suggesting we do, which is, you know, let's call on the legislature to do something.
It's friendly.
Is that friendly?
Friendly.
Yeah. All right. Now go back to your other one, Carol.
Okay. And so then the other one was, where was it? The railed against. Can you come up with some? I mean, if you don't like my suggestion, I just don't like the word railed against. It's, I don't know, it's unnecessary language.
It just characterizes him so well. But what do you have?
He has characterized New York State as having more than. So you take out the words.
Is that friendly?
Railed against the existence of, and replaces it with, characterized New York State as having, and it would continue, more than 10,000 government entities the way you've got it.
Yeah, sure.
Is that, Anna, is that friendly? All right, so that's added as well.
Then just with those changes, I think it really does change the tone enough and puts the emphasis on weighing into the legislature, but making the point in a way everybody can hear it more easily. And so I would hope that would make a difference to you, Mike, and Martha, and Jim, and anybody else who was reacting to the sort of the strong language.
Martha.
So I want to know who's going to call, say, 56 county legislature chairs and see if they can get this on the agenda of county legislature agendas, like, when? I mean, our next meeting is March 21st. So, you know, if we get these resolutions from other counties all the time in our packets, and mostly we just kind of move them into the recycling bin. This is not going to do anything unless somebody commits to a massive effort to make phone calls and convince people that they should stick their necks out in the same way as we are and call those legislatures and try to get them to do this.
Okay, are we?
I don't see it. Even if somebody were going to make 50 or 60 calls, you know, I've been in those meetings at NYSEC where people like to complain, but then when it comes to raising their hand, it's
It doesn't happen, and you're sitting there in front of them. I'm still opposed to it.
Peter?
I'd like to respond to Martha. I think, Martha, if that took place, actually, that we could do that, then that would certainly increase the odds that he would take action against us. Frankly, I think it's very unlikely that this is ever going to come to his attention unless it becomes, unless we convince many other people to decide it. So I think your two arguments are...
Right. We're going to go on for a while, apparently. We've got Dooley, then I've got Mike, then I've got Jim.
First, I wanted to address what I think was Mike Sigler's suggestion about building a bridge. What I understand from Mike in a different conversation was that his concern is in large part about having a grant come to our airport. If I'm putting words in your mouth, I'm sorry, but I thought that's what you were concerned about. And given that the other southern tier airports in Binghamton and Elmira have not been chosen by the airlines or have been unable to convince the airlines to use them. Instead, the airlines are coming to Tompkins County Airport. It's hard for me to believe that whatever the governor thinks of Tompkins County, he would oppose that money coming to our airport and still be able to claim that he wants to help the southern tier grow. So I'm not worried about the grant for our airport, which is the one thing that I had heard some of my colleagues, in addition to Mike, say was of concern.
Mike Sigler?
I probably should have been more eloquent, I guess, the last time I spoke, but most people spoke better than I did. And not that that's not expected, but I guess I just always think that a resolution should advance your position. And I just don't see how this does that. And I guess that's what I'm kind of tortured over, is that, okay, we're going to send a resolution to the governor, and it says that you're all wet, and, you know, we don't agree with you. And I think he knows that. I'm sorry, Peter. I think he gets it. And I think it's time. I mean, he's been in office a while now, that I would like him to listen to us. And I don't think that by passing resolutions like this, he does. I think that by approaching him in a different, I think we need to change our tact. That's what I think. And if you don't want to change your tact, yeah, we can pass more of these and we can keep saying that he's wrong. We can even call it ridiculous. That's what I liked about some of the stuff that we wrote earlier. It was kind of like, listen, it's even when people talk to me, and not to go too long, I won't. When people talk to me about how property taxes are too high, and I tell them, well, who are you blaming for that? You're blaming the county? Because the county taxes, frankly, you get a lot for your county property tax. I don't want to see them go up. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like we do keep that in check. Your town, Lansing, is unbelievable when it comes to its town property taxes. I mean, it's your school districts. Your school districts, let's face it, they're the chunk, right? But nobody's going to – I never see, you know – those voted down because people understand schools are important. They keep your property values up. They also educate your children, which is a little sideline bonus for everybody. So, you know, those things are all good. I think people understand that it's not, I would hope they do, that it's not us really driving the bills here. And that, you know what, I just think if we keep hitting on the Medicaid thing and keep hitting on the Medicaid thing, that is our strongest argument for the governor. And we're not attacking the governor when we say it. We say the state should take this over. And if they just took that over, that makes a world of difference for us. That changes the ballgame. Because, again, we're one of, what, two states that has that kind of charge back to the counties? What, is it us in Oregon, I think? I don't even know the second state. But that's a big chunk. And if we just can focus on that and not get into this personal idea of the governor is out to lunch on this. I just think we make more headway with him. So that's my two cents.
Jim, and then let's get to
Yeah, there were two things said, one by Dooley, one by Peter. Dooley made the point that she doesn't know how the governor could not give us $20 million, and, you know, he could then be accused of not helping the Southern Tier. They gave $40 million to Elmira, and the Jets left, okay? That's number one. The other thing Peter said when Martha was saying how hard it is to get 57 other counties to follow this, Peter said that, yeah, that is difficult to do, and he won't hear about it anyway if we don't do that, if we only do it. So my suggestion is we pass it, we beg the media not to report it, and we all go away really happy or unhappy that we've stuck our finger in the governor's eye again.
All right, let's get to a vote. Why do we need to keep talking? And it's Dooley and Carol. Dooley.
I had my hand up.
Go ahead.
I had two points I wanted to make, Mike, and you assumed after I spoke the first one that I was finished. I wasn't.
Not assume.
I have gone through this and listened to the amendments, which I said are friendly. The resolution as it reads now is one I'm going to vote against. I would only support what I had written that was much stronger and said what I truly believe. So that's where I am.
All right. Come on. Let's Dooley's spoken. Is there another point, Dooley?
Yes. And if Martha wants to add the legislative...
Come on. Order.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
If Martha wants to add the legislative leaders to the resolution, I suggest she move that.
No, I don't want to touch it. Are you kidding?
All right. Julie, are you complete now?
No.
Carol.
Just, all right, come on.
I do want to speak. Julie, I don't get it. Why did you accept it as friendly? If you disagree with it that strongly, you accepted... I went through them in turn. I would hope that you'd reconsider Jim, I'm reminded of the very first conference I went to in my Cornell job. Somebody made a speaker made a comment about how she would, when she wanted to make sure everybody read something, she would mark it, stamp it with confidential on the top. And you've just sort of guaranteed a headline if we do this.
Okay.
And then what I raised my hand first for was that to make the point that we have been in the governor's office. We've been. Can we have some order?
Yeah, let's. Come on, stop the side conversations.
I realize things just got sort of less serious here. But I wanted to add the point, which I think is a new one that hasn't been raised, is that we have been there in the governor's office fairly repeatedly, being upset about these kinds of measures. This is not a secret to him where we stand. As a matter of fact, Martha, that the picture that we have of you with your finger in the governor's face, that was followed up in close order by practically having to break up a fist.
All right, do you have any new information?
And the chief of staff. So, you know, this is not a secret. And we, since then, my point is that since then, since that time that we sat there and hadn't sat down for the meeting yet, that we weren't furious at the governor for the first of the measures he took, pushing more costs onto counties and then refusing to show up to talk about them, we have gotten a lot of money from the state. So the fact that we have disagreed with this has not, you know, impacted with the level of seriousness that people had raised that we might not get our grants, because there are shared aims between us and the state. The governor recognizes that. It's why we are successful getting the money that we do. And I don't think that there's that kind of risk from taking a position publicly that that he already knows we feel, both because we've had our administrator there, we've asked him to come, we've brought him, and we've, you know, with a finger in his face, actually in front of the entire NYSEC conference, marching up there, he knows.
We're going to proceed to a vote now. We've talked enough about this. There are no new points being made. All those, the motion, or the resolution is the one that came in the packet with the four amendments that were agreed to that Carol offered. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The resolution fails. Let's move on. Minutes of the previous meeting, February 17th, which were postponed. Been moved by Leslin, seconded by Anna. Martha?
February 7th. You said 17th.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was the February 7th meeting, 2017. Been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed.
Two.
Oh, there's two opposed. Three. Let's get the... All right, give me the no's. Get the no's. Julie, Peter, Jim. All right. That passes. Let's take the minutes of February 21st, 2017. Someone... Who's moving it? Martha's moving it. Is there a second? Seconded by Anna. Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I have one. Two opposed. That's Dooley and Mike. Those are both passed. Is there any unfinished business tonight? I'll take a motion to adjourn by Peter, seconded by Martha. We are adjourned.
I want a roll call vote on that.
Wait.
You're about to get jumped.